I never know what's going on, so I just yell shit and interrupt you guys all the time.
I remember from a very young age fucking having pussy powers used on me to fucking do shit, man, and I didn't know why.
Who took a piss while we were recording with Todd last week?
That's what I was saying. I was telling you that.
And
I
didn't
said, when
fucking
you were,
mute their
when
mic,
you were saying,
bro.
When you were saying someone's taking a piss, I'm like, don't talk about taking a piss because now I have to take a piss.
Randy Buehler looks ridiculous. I want to start a GoFundMe. Seriously, do you think people would donate that if we started a GoFundMe to get Randy Buehler a fucking Pro Tour suit?
Dude, there's no fucking way.
Ah, let me start that over. I fucked that. I started reading.
Worst piece of shit intro ever.
Guess what? I'm pissing right now.
Oh, fuck.
Yeah, it could even.
What up, what up? It's your boy, Brother Ryan, the Sex Panther, back on the island once again with the crew. Ruben, what's up, buddy?
What's good, everybody?
Glad you're here. Glad you're, you know, with us this week and everything.
Me too.
Sid.
Me too.
Yeah, Sid's been here.
Yeah, where is he?
Howdy, homies. Sid Meister's over here. I'm on my way over to Matt's house to fuck with him while he's sleeping.
There you go. That sounds like fun. Matt is not here tonight, in case you just heard or figured that out. He is sleeping like a bitch, so...
I'm about to get up inside of him like the incubus.
There you go. Do what needs to be done.
Yeah, I fucked him. Somebody needed to.
Back again, though. You know, he's like, he's a fucking co-host. He's family here. We love this guy. He's our favorite grinder. We got a first place SCG season 2 points leader, KFED, Kevin Jones. What's good, buddy?
Hey, guys. How's it going?
It's fucking awesome, dude. We're glad to have you back, Kevin. You were like the first pro level grinder that we had ever had on the show. Yeah,
well,
we were
like right before me.
Yeah, but West Coast like this like archmage shit. We're talking about like SCG grinder type.
Oh yeah,
dude.
Yeah. I started a nice trend there. Lowry and Nesto came after me. It's awesome.
Yep. Yeah, man. And we were stoked about that to have like a SCG dude on. And now I'm just even more stoked because the fucking homie's here now, man.
Get down on your fucking knees. Suck his cock.
Glad to be back. It's a good time.
Yeah, a lot of people asking for you. We've been hanging out, drinking some beers. We hope we're together and coherent. We've, you know, had a nice little conversation backstage, more or less. But we're about to get into it. There was, obviously, the highlight of the weekend. Fucking Dragons of Tarkir Pro Tour. Let's get into it.
I had sex with a cabbage on Chat Roulette.
If you don't know... It was standard, of course, and they start off as usual, rocking the draft. Sid, the big draft guy here in the house, saw some
So things. Was this the first block where they didn't do like a block constructed for the third set of the Pro Tour?
Yeah, if I remember correctly, yeah.
Yeah, I always thought block like constructed was pretty
it.
Dope, man.
Really? Yeah, that was kind of sad that they didn't
the first
do it,
year
but
they
I know
eliminated.
Why they did it.
Is block really a loss?
Well, I mean, that's the first time we ever saw, like, a Blue-White Miracles deck was in a block-constructed Pro Tour.
That's true.
Jund Midrange, that badass standard deck from the Innistrad Theros, or Innistrad Return to Ravnica standard. You know, that was a block-constructed deck that was very good.
Patrick Chapin won a block-constructed fucking Pro Tour.
Yeah, that's true. And Abzan Control that we know today, you know, that Ari won with and stuff, that's like based on the shell that Chapin had designed.
I don't think we would have got anything new or exciting here, or really of anything. I think if this was a block tournament, it would have been a lot more stale. I mean, Chapin himself said it was quasi-new. This was pretty well figured out going in the most part, I think, except for the aggressive red decks, which surprised me because we're such a huge part of the meta, but so many people throughout the weekend said they did not expect that like, you know, real low to the ground version of more or less mono red.
I wouldn't have expected it either, man. Most of the time in the high level tournaments like that, you do see a lot of control decks because I think that pro players, you know, in the Pro Tour, they favor those kind of strategies.
We did see a lot of burn at the, what was the last Pro Tour? Was Modern. There was a lot of burn there.
Yeah,
but
Modern.
That was Modern, though. In Standard, though, Sid's absolutely right. In Standard, have not really seen like a real aggressive, heavy red format. And a lot of people, I think, were caught off guard with it. But it was, I don't know, it's kind of weird. It was a huge part of the meta yet somehow about.
Well, so something interesting happened. And I think it's contributed to the rise of the red decks. But it's kind of like the consequences of something completely different has led to the red decks being good. And if I can, chime in for a second, I'll help you guys out with that. So there's this deck before the new set came out.
Uh-huh.
It was Red White Aggro. You guys all know that deck, right?
Yep. Yep.
Like Outpost Siege, Hordling Outburst,
Chain to the Rocks,
Seeker Chain, Rabble Master.
That deck was sweet.
Yeah.
That deck was sweet, and it was like one of the best decks in Standard for a while. But it started to warp. It almost warped Standard. It was so good. And, like, decks started to adjust to beat it, and then Dragons of Tarkir came out, and Dromoka's Command got printed, and Chain to the Rocks went from being, like, a huge upside with very little drawback, like a hugely efficient removal spell with very little drawback, to being a liability when there's main deck Dromoka's Command in, you know, Green-White Devotion and Abzan aggro. So that deck, like, it was just, like, mono-red with better creatures. So, like, mono-red could never, ever beat 4 Soulfire Grandmaster, 4 Seeker of the Way, 4 Hordling Outburst.
Yeah.
It was just like, it was a terrible matchup. So that deck like kept Mono Red at bay, and now that deck's less good. So Mono Red is preying on all these 3 color decks with bad mana bases, and that's that.
Now, this was a discussion today that was happening on the Facebook page. The deck that had won the Pro Tour wasn't technically mono, because it did have green cards in it. But when people say mono red, sometimes they're just nicknaming an archetype, which represents that red style of all-in aggressive.
Right. Exactly.
But that's like red deck. I don't know. When you say, once you say the word mono, that mono is mono. Like, that's one. Mono means one.
It's a shitty nickname, but, I mean, that's just the name that's given to it.
It's kind of like, I get what you're saying. Like, the community kind of has a different definition of it. See, this kind of, I feel you, Sid, because this is how I felt about the term seeing play.
Yeah.
Ruben was on, like, the literal definition, and I was on, like, the community definition. Like, so I get you, I guess, in mono in this sense, but I don't know. When you're splashing this many lands that are green, you're going all in on a set of mana confluence for another color.
Yeah, you're actually running red green.
Yeah, you're running
mono red.
5 green cards main board. I just hesitate.
But
to call it
doesn't
mono.
Play green. It's not bringing any beef with its creatures. It's going wide. And
no,
that's
but it's
mono
but
red.
Two of its biggest win conditions
are
Atarka's
Command
green.
On all those tokens.
Yes, green.
Yeah, it's like
become
it's,
immense
it's funny
green
because it's splashing 2 green cards, but the green cards, like, well, one of them is also red, so they're not even really, like, splashed half of a card with a target command.
Touche.
It's just the way the deck plays. Like, if you play a red aggressive deck versus a green aggressive deck, they very differently, and there's, like, different ways that you attack the meta with
I think
those
the come immense is just a better Titan strength in this deck.
The green cards are the most red cards in the deck, which is crazy.
Yes,
the most
that might be true.
Is become immense. Like, it's the only pure non-red card in the deck, and it's the one that is, like, the most balls-to-the-wall aggressive.
So you're comfortable calling this mono-red, then?
I absolutely call this deck mono-red. I say mono-red splashing become immense, or mono-red with command. If someone doesn't Mad beats me all the time.
The official name of this deck established today is the Mono Red Splash Green Charlie Sheen.
Yes. I love that name. Who was that, Travis?
As Red Green Aggro on Star City. They listed as RG Aggro, where the dragon deck is GR Aggro, which is, like, confusing. So I just call it Mono Red, whatever.
it's
gruel through and through. That's it. Fuck it. It has green in it.
Yeah,
in
I'm all about representing.
Oh, well, we're debating semantics at this point. Let's get into
that's cool,
man.
It's like whatever. Welcome to the island, motherfucker.
Yeah, it's what we do.
What did you notice about drafts, Sid? Anything? I mean, at this point, it's more or less, I thought, figured out. Did you see anything? Did anyone see anything new?
So clearly, from what a lot of pros had said and what showed up, you know, basically in the results, is you wanted to be playing either black or red in this format. It's just the most deep color for commons. There's so many like very good premium removal spells at common and uncommon in black and red, and threats that are they just outclass, you know, white aggressive decks, or the green deal has like counters going on with it. And I've seen some pretty cool like green white +1/+1 counter decks, but they play very like, they play a very synergistic game. So that lends itself to, you know, variance and not being able to go off right. So yeah, they had shown Jacob Wilson drafting in the first pod, and he was starting off in white and noticed that black was open, and after the first pack, you know, he had mostly white cards and it looked very underpowered, but once he was able to pick up that signal that black was open, he ended up with a really good deck.
Was he the one that opened an Ojutai?
Yeah, Jacob Wilson's deck was blue-white. I think you might have been talking about Shahar's deck was black-white.
Oh yeah, Shahar on day two, that's black and white.
Yeah, and side note, those sweaters that they had, that he had on, those were really cool. He had like a Channel Fireball sweater over like a button-up shirt. I'm like, man, that is awesome. That's a sick sponsorship. Anyway, yeah, no, Jacob Wilson's deck is like one of the ones that I really like. I like the blue-white deck, and I like the black-red deck, which like what Huey had when he played Jacob Wilson round one, like the black-red dash deck.
Yeah, that was cool.
I don't. Am I the only one that thinks blue-black is kind of the way to go?
No, like,
well,
no,
the exploit deck is good.
Yeah, but also I think it didn't really matter as long as you either played black or red in your deck.
Yeah, the thing is like, I mean,
what
blue,
are you
black,
doing if you don't get the white flyers?
Well, you can go for a go pacifism, wide game with white. I mean, you get there's a stuff, there's a uncommon called Great Teacher's Decree that does like a sanctified charge with rebound.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's like a common strategy, is you would play these rebound cards like Ojutai summons and build up a board presence that's like going wider than what your opponent can deal with, and just use one of those finishers to like 19 them out of nowhere, Khanza Tarkir style.
That's the plus two plus oh rebound, right?
It's +2/+1.
That card's awesome.
Yeah, oh, no, yeah, that is a really good card.
Tygum Strike, yeah.
Yeah, that card is cool. Sure. But the blue-white deck needs one a lot of the time. At least one.
Yeah, it's a respectable finisher, man. But the fact is you can't spend very high picks on these finishers for that deck, because it's so crucial to have the critical mass of like little dudes to be able to use that with. Like, I feel like the blue-white deck, it's a lot like the Jeskai decks in the old limited format, where you're still trying to find that sweet balance of creature to non-creature spells. But it makes it pretty awkward, because a lot of the non-creature spells are rewarding you for playing more creatures out onto the battlefield.
It is. It's an interesting tension there with like... Mm-hmm.
What I found with the blue-black decks, we saw Yelger had a pretty good blue-black deck on day two. It really requires like a game plan early on. You have to decide what you're going to do, because there's actually two different versions of a blue-black deck. There is an aggressive blue-black deck that, you know, can basically keep up with the Kolaghan decks. You know, there are quite a few aggressive blue creatures at common and uncommon. So you just got to decide, you know, what your strategy is very early on for the blue-black. And Yelger was definitely on the grindy kind of exploit card advantage type plan, and it was great, man.
Okay. I got a question for you, limited guys. This is something that kind of Bueller mentioned during coverage, was that it's not so much the first pick format that's important so much as the second. Would you agree with that, or
what I was told from people who freaking draft a lot is like your first pick, like everybody's picking their rare because their rares are so balmy and shit, that it actually, like, your second and third pick actually tell you kind of where you're supposed to be at.
Yeah, okay, there's really only, like, three, you know, clearly passable over any reasonable common or uncommon rares, and only, like, two mythic rares.
In Fate Reforged,
I think there's some bad rares.
There's only three bad rares in Fate Reforged.
So here's an interesting thing we saw about Fate Reforged that's developed now. You're getting past cards that you would have never saw when Fate Reforged was the first pack. I believe somebody had passed on like a Palace Siege. I think there were quite a few rares that had gone by in Shahar Shinhar's draft that were green. He was just so like not wanting to be anywhere near green. He passed like Sandstep Mastodon and Teemer War Shaman. And these are cards that when that's pack one, pick one, like you're never getting past that. Yeah, but pack three, you know, you can get hooked up.
So like a lot of the, you know, big bitching about Fate Reforged was like, you know, if you get like this bomb and you're automatically winning. I think Watsi did a great like job of coming in with dragons and just fucking smoothing things over. For that, you know, for this now Dragon's Fate, you know, draft format that we're going to see.
Yeah, 100% agree, man. I totally like Fate Reforged as the third pack rather than the first pack.
Okay, makes sense. Let's, I mean, is that it for draft? I mean, I'm...
Draft of the Pro Tour is awesome, man. You know, it is. It was sweet to watch. There's not a lot of details to go into, but there are a lot of people out there like myself that love to just watch limited Magic because it doesn't play out the same as constructed Magic. And it's one of my favorite parts of the Pro Tour, and it's just great to see, you know, what the pros analysis of the set is.
Well, fuck, man. Yeah. Let's move on. Let's get into Standard. We start out, basically the metagame looked like 11% red aggro, 10% Abzan. Red-green dragons was heavily represented, about 9% blue-black control.
Hold on, Ryan. You say 10% Abzan, but there's like so many Abzan decks. Is that encompassing Abzan all aggro. Abzan decks?
No,
Abzan aggro, and then Abzan control was 6% of the field.
Green so it devotion. Was 11% red deck wins and 10% cat junk?
Yeah.
Pretty bro, aggressive. Those rounds were over quick.
Yeah, and we saw a lot of that. It rounds out basically with Green White Devotion at 5.5 and Jeskai Aggro at 5. You know, really a whole bunch of stuff. 5 people showed up with Chromanta Flare. That was kind of unexpected. And
that was dope, bro. As fuck.
It's V Moshowitz, man. The evil genius.
Atarka Abzan, Seth Manfield in their deck with basically an Abzan list running Atarka. This is basically, for the most part, what we kind of expected, aside from like what we mentioned, the red aggro was, you know, kind of not expected. I was sad to not see some crazy innovation or something, you know, kind of off the wall. I mean, I'm sure there was some off the wall stuff. But Sam Black had the Bees deck.
There were all types of cool decks in this tournament, but none of them did well. Like, the decks that did well were fair decked, you know? Nobody's doing anything broken right now.
I guess there was no, like, mono blue devotion that just came out of nowhere.
But also, I think one of the things that we're grouping in all the different blue-black control decks together, all the different red-based decks together, because a lot of these lists were completely opposite from each other. But we're just saying, like, blue-black control and, you know, whatever, Dimir control, fucking red aggro.
Yeah. Let's see who made it to the top with their version of whatever. I know we had, you know, like you're saying, several versions. We got a couple versions of control here in the top eight. The top eight.
So there was some innovations in these colors.
Yeah, Adrian Sullivan's list, which we'll get to in a minute. Pretty sweet. So
We're going to the top eight. Where's the link to the top eight?
Top eight bracket goes Andre Strowski, Andrew Olschlager, Shauta Yusoka, Jason Chung, Martin Dang, Marco Camaluzzi, Thomas Hendricks, and Adrian Sullivan.
Man, why does the mothership always got to be confounding me? How the hell do I get to?
Yeah, she's posted a link. The mothership. I just posted a link. Is always like trying to.
The mothership, you unwieldy behemoth.
So, who are these guys that made the top eight? Who the fuck are they? Let's take a look. We'll start with Jason Chung here, 22-year-old from New Zealand. He does have an 11th place finish at Pro Tour Fate Reforged, so he's hot right now.
He almost top eighted the Modern Pro Tour with Burn. He was in like. Was it 11th, you said?
Yep. Yeah, it was 11th.
Yeah.
Let's see, Shouta Yasoka. You got everyone should know who he is by now. Japanese legend, more or less.
He's a legend in the making. Dude hasn't even been playing that long, but he just ranches motherfuckers, man.
Yeah, 2006 Player of the Year. Had a great showing on Team MTG Mint Card, which, as we said last Pro Tour, is their fucking beast.
Yeah, I feel like that team is gonna have a top 8 competitor every Pro Tour, at least one.
Seems like it. Yeah, they're damn good. So. Marco Camaluzzi, this is another guy. I had no idea who he was, an Italian guy.
I believe he tested with Day One MTG, which is like half American and then a couple Italians.
Yeah, he says Day One and the Italian family, so that's that means. Thomas Hendricks, 22-year-old. He has played the Magic World Cup twice, made it to top 16. He's got a GP top 8, but first time here at the Pro Tour. Andrew Olschlager, 28-year-old from Colorado. He does have a top 8 at GP Denver and a top 16th place as well. So Adrian Sullivan, he's been around forever. Everyone should know who this guy is, so...
Yeah, like, one of my faves. He's been riding forever, super nice guy. I was super
He was riding, like, before the internet. That fool was riding, like, Inquest and shit.
So what do you feel about them making, I believe it was PV at a GP recently, had to turn his cards, had to play with his lands or whatever, what they called camera friendly. And here at the Pro Tour, they let Adrian play with his cards upside down. Did anyone have any feelings about that? I mean,
no. Listen,
he's been playing that way forever.
Yeah, I didn't care. I like the dude. No, I think he's cool shit.
Yeah,
so.
Listen. Here's the thing. Like, if you play in like, whatever. I started like playing in Revised, where your lands in the rules, your lands were played in front of your cards.
Why does this bother people so much? Like, why do?
Yeah, I have no
clue. I don't get it.
I mean,
well, in my opinion, when you're playing at this highest level, if your opponent's bothered by you playing your cards like that, that's probably a good thing.
Yeah. But one of the things they pointed out with him, and it's the reason why they said it's the reason why he plays like this, is that he constantly is teaching people how to play Magic. And so it's always easier when you're teaching someone, like, you know, like when I teach my kids, I do this, but I also play like this as well, where I play with my cards facing my opponent. So it's easier for them to read if it's something they've never seen before. But he's constantly teaching people the game of Magic. And so he's just used to playing with his cards facing his opponent for this reason.
I heard him ask this one time, and he said, I know what my cards do. It's my responsibility to have them so that my opponents can know what they do as well.
Exactly. There you go.
Okay. I've been teaching this homie of mine to play lately, man, and dude can totally read upside down. Like, you know, like we can read right side up. I'm so jealous, man.
There you go. Well, hell yeah.
I like, we'll go to like show it to him. He's like, yeah, I can read that shit.
He rocked limited. He's not known for his limited play. He went 6-0 there. 6-2-2 in constructed, which is respectable. So props to him. Everyone was happy to see him in the top 8. Little sad he didn't at least pull out the finals. But
yeah, I would have loved to see him in the finals. Like, he at that point when he made top 8, like, he was like my emotional favorite.
Yeah. Martin Dang, GP Liverpool winner. You may remember him. He's the one who took this down with basically what they're calling Atarka's Red, or Mono Red, as we debated earlier. But
it's Mono Red Splash Green Charlie Sheen winning.
There you go.
Exactly.
Andres Strowski, the 19-year-old phenom, second Pro Tour top 8 in the last like year. He is on to Cabin Crew, great there, and ran the Red Green Devotion.
Yeah, so. And they're saying like his team was saying that he is the next superstar, Magic the Gathering superstar.
See. Well, that remains to be seen.
I mean, I've been around. I haven't been in the game that long, and I've heard that like.
He top eighted with Jeskai at Pro Tour Consul Tarkir, and this is his second top 8 with this block, which is pretty crazy.
I mean, yeah, didn't Jacob Wilson do that same thing like with Theros block or something? Or no, he was like in top 8 at Born of the Gods and at Pro Tour Consul Tarkir.
No, it's Born of the Gods and Fate Reforged. It was back to back.
Oh, Fate Reforged. That's it. Yeah.
And Li Shi Tian had back-to-back Modern Pro Tour top 8.
Modern Pro Tour top 8.
Li Shi Tian top-8ed 3 Modern Pro Tours in a row, because he also
top-8ed. You just can't fuck with his shit, dude.
He top-8ed with Scapeshift in Seattle, Return to Ravnica. Looking at the top 8 profiles, that it was a bunch of 5-1s and a 6-0 for limited records, so nobody had a 4-2 limited record and top-8ed.
Yeah.
Yeah, bro. Draft's important.
It's a testament to how important
it
that
leads
is,
me
yeah.
to believe that a lot of standard is like just play what you like, or like a lot of the decks are similar powerful because nothing's broken, obviously. Like no deck came out and took.
Yeah, there's no like turn a Thoughtseize into a pack rat, you know, like there's
no,
nothing
there's
that
no
strong in this standard.
Runner, so it like it rewards like people like Adrian who play you know, blue black, who play a blue control deck like religiously, you know, he played blue white, blue black, like so like it just rewards people who are comfortable with their decks. And the red decks are good choices too, because like you're gonna lose a few rounds because your lands come to play tapped against the red deck. You know, like red decks are.
Yeah,
gonna
you get a free one or two wins just based on somebody beating their own ass with their lands.
And like if you're so good, you know, if you're so confident and limited, like every round of standard that win is like worth so much value. Like I mean, it's worth a lot of money too when you get up there. Like every round,
yeah,
you know, a couple $100 or whatever. But
that's true. That's true.
The just the expected value of every win is just so high because of how intense and how important the tournament is. So like,
well, it's match points too. I mean,
yeah.
Who was it that it was just a real important match at the end between Utter Layton, and neither one I think had a chance at top eighting, but I think if Josh won it, he locked up platinum.
Was it, I think it was
platinum, bro. That's awesome.
Yeah. Was it Josh and Ifro or Josh and Rietzel
playing there? I don't know. Both of them had a lot on the line though. And I think it was basically platinum. And
yeah, I know that the winner of that match would have had to sweat the breakers and had like an outside chance.
Yeah,
at
Yeah, very outside. They would have been the 1-4 losser. So
yeah, but the season's not over yet. They can still get a tournament, and get enough
it was,
pro points.
It was
to make
Paul
platinum,
Rietzel.
Right?
Okay, but yeah, that's still a cool story. And so every round here, I mean, it's not even just money to some of these people where this is like their career. I mean, the difference between gold and platinum.
Yeah, our homie, that slick motherfucker, Craig Wesco, dude, he finished 10th, and he's like 1 point away from platinum. So he's going to that GP this weekend. Hopefully he's
yeah,
able to lock that shit
yeah,
up.
What he needs, I think he said he needs to top 8 the GP in order to lock up platinum.
Well, he said he needs like 1 pro point, dog.
There you go. Go get it. Well, let's take a look at, you know, what the top 8 was on. We've mentioned, obviously, we spoiled it earlier, Martin Dang, Red Aggro, or Gruul if you're Ruben. 4 Founders.
Or League. Mono Red, Splash Green, Charlie Sheen.
Mono Red, I can't even any words.
That's why we allow Sid to say shit.
Okay.
Yeah, for real. I come to this shit fucked up all the time and I can talk, man. That's all you gotta do when you do a podcast is talk, bro. That's like, well, you do the editing and shit. Ryan's more like the technical behind the scenes guy.
I get tongue tied, but
all the gay porn sound effects you hear, he watched all of those gay porn.
I had
to
watch hours of gay
yes,
porn.
Yes, he watched hours of gay porn to
that was the sacrifice he made
to find
for you.
Those for you so.
So yeah, I'm gonna go over this badass red deck. So we got 4 Foundry Street Denizen, that's a badass goblin. 1 Frenzied Goblin, this is an interesting goblin. That's the 1/1 for red mana. And then when he attacks, you can pay a red mana to make something not block. One ofs in mono red decks have always confused me. But anywho, we got a double Goblin Rabble Master, 1 Lightning Berserker, 4 Taylor Swift Spear, and 3 Zergo Bell Striker. Those are all the creatures, you know, not like a really insane amount of creatures for a red aggressive deck, but that's because this guy's going hard in the paint on the instants and sorceries. For example, he's got 4 Dragon Fodder, 4 Howling Outburst.
Goblins, goblins, goblins.
Dude's dope. He's got some instants, 4 Atarka's Command. So this was a new thing we saw. Everybody was kind of hating on Atarka's Command, but you know, it definitely sticks to that kind of plan. It is a very fucking red card.
Yeah.
Speaking of red cards that aren't red, we got the 1 Become Immense. You know, any card that says Delve and only has 1 colored mana symbol on it's good.
That's
we know
good.
That now. Ban it. 4 Lightning Strike, 4 Stokes, and 4 Wild Slash. The 4 Wild Slash in the main board, I know it was very dead in this like control heavy, devotion heavy kind of meta, but I'm sure that it was good, say, you know, with, you said it was like 11% mono red day one. I'm sure that, you know, he looked good in this matchup. And, you know, a lot of people want to discount. Oh, hold on. Let me do a sideboard. Okay. Finishes off the playset of Rabble Masters. He's got 4 Eidolons of the Great Revel because that's just like an insane red card.
Yep.
and clicked off of the thing. I touched it.
Okay, the Eidolon, the Goblin, one more Goblin Heel Cutter, one Destructive Revelry, two Hall of Triumph, Mirror Breaker, four Roast, and one Scouring Fans.
Dude, Mirror Destructive Revelry is kind of serious, though, man. That shit does some damage. Look at all these courses of Crucifix, man.
Yeah, pretty good. Get rid of a blocker, swing through. I like it as a one-of or a fun-of.
Now, we're going to let Kevin get salty here in a minute. But as the dude of Love and Red, the red mage that I am, I got to say, man, I've heard a lot of people talking smack that, you know, mono red is like, I guess it's fun police or, you know, not a very, it was a surprise deck choice. A lot of people discounted it, but it's good in this meta. And the fact is that mono red always has been. It's one of those archetypes like blue black control with Adrian Sullivan that when you learn how to play it, it doesn't matter what the cards are called, man. It's a game plan that when you feel it, man, you can go deep in tournaments with a deck that people often underestimate.
So fucking deep.
Definitely true. I think that, like, the skill set to play, like, Modern Burn and the skill set to play, like, this red-green deck are like, very different. Like, the mono-red deck, whatever you want to call it. I think it's true that, like, if you've played, you know, red aggro decks most of your Magic career, you'll do well with this red aggro deck. But I think that, like, Modern Burn is very different. You know what I mean? Like, they're just two different mono red decks, but some people would just be like, oh, this is dumb.
I mean,
or had a bunch of mono red decks in it too. But, like,
both decks, like, even though the game plan is very straightforward, if you can't stick to that and you misplay, these are some of the most unforgiving kind of decks to not playing perfect. To play a deck like this, you've got to know what the fuck you're doing, because if you get behind even a little bit, it's over. Like, these decks, you'll play them and you'll always feel like you're ahead until they draw a couple of extra cards and then you just lose.
Yeah.
There's, like, this fallacy in understanding where people seem to think that control decks are so hard to play and that that aggro decks, red aggro decks are mindless, or that aggro decks are mindless. And that's not true at all. It's, like, it's a different kind of... You get punished in different ways for different kind of mistakes.
And especially math-wise, you're doing a lot more math, I think, with the red deck than you are playing troll.
Like, well, of course, with
control, deck has,
with control, you just need to be able to react properly to whatever your opponent's trying to do.
Yeah, sequencing
red is causing
and
you to come up with the plan.
No, listen.
It has, like, infinitely more decisions, but, like, the decisions you make are more likely to just lead to another decision down the road that... And you have to, like, you have to make everyone right, but, like, a lot of times control decks will, like, they'll give you a chance to, you know, mess one up and then make two or three right. Like, you know, like, letting Nissa resolve, you'll just lose. Or letting Xenagos resolve, you'll just lose. Something like that. But, like, a lot of times, like, the old Blue-White Revelation deck from last standard, like, if you messed up and played the wrong land and then you couldn't counter something or couldn't do two things in one turn, like, you could still win that game, but, like, that mistake would set you back. But, like, if you make the wrong mistake and, like, don't leave up the mana for a Tarkus command the turn they play Siege Rhino, or, like, whatever. Like, if you just make a mistake with the red aggro,
you're punished a lot more for it, yeah.
The ceiling's gonna, like, you know, it's like a glass castle. Like, you're just gonna knock all the work you build will be, like, undone immediately by one mistake, because the margins for victory are a lot more drastic with these.
Yeah, I'm gonna tell you, I've played a lot of red deck wins, and I've made a lot of mistakes in these decks, and playing it and sticking with it, you know, like, even though it's considered to be, like, too linear and not very interesting decision-wise, I feel has made me a better Magic player than I would have been, you know, had I not stuck with it and decided to move on to something else. It just allows me to think of the game on a different axis.
Well, watch Tom Ross. I mean, if you watch Tom Ross play aggro and tell me that you would make the same plays he does, you're a fucking liar.
Well, yeah, I mean, listen, when you watch, like, Tom Ross play aggro, a lot of times...
He's brilliant, bro.
Like, his games, he's brilliant. And a lot of times his games go long because he's, like, so patient and deliberate and things of that nature. It's not, I mean, sometimes for the control deck, it's easier to play the control deck because it's sort of mindless, you know, permission. Yeah. Okay.
Well, yeah, and like,
you know,
Kevin
said, you can get
away with a little bit. But...
Yeah, okay, that doesn't resolve. Sometimes it's
Tom
Ross
is next
whatever.
Level, too. You know why he plays mainboard treasure cruises? Because he's got a lot of fetch lands, bro.
This is true.
Fucking genius shit.
Genius. I'm sorry.
Also, really, really good at just, like, being completely fearless, like not only being fearless himself, but instilling fear in his opponents. And like, there's a game in the Invitational last year where Tom is playing the boss Slydeck in the New Jersey Invitational for Star City, and Reed Duke is playing like Green Devotion splashing red. And he might also have Rakdos Return, but whatever. But he's basically just Green Devotion, and he has like a Courser and an Elvish Mystic, or a Courser and a Caryatid. He has two creatures, and Tom Ross has two random 2/2s and nothing in his hand, or like one or two cards in hand, but he doesn't have, you know, an answer to the Courser, and he just untaps and doesn't even think and just snap attacks both his creatures into Reed, and Reed like doesn't block with the Courser to eat Tom's 2/2 and like blocks differently instead. Yeah. And like, I don't even know who won the game. It just doesn't even matter. But it was just like the most insane attack.
Tom is the master bluffer. That's for sure.
He's yeah, man.
Very
yeah,
good at
we're
bluffing.
We're watching you, Tom.
And we're watching.
We're watching
this is,
him.
This is like my favorite bluff ever. I don't want to get you guys too sidetracked, but this is a really cool anecdote. Do you guys have like 30 seconds for this bluff?
Yeah.
Come on. Hit us with it, bro.
Okay, it's a Pro Tour, I think it was Dark Ascension a few years ago. So it's Dark Ascension Innistrad Limited, and Samuele Estradi is playing against Tom Martell.
Uh-huh.
And Tom Martell has the 3 blue wizard 1/1 that like mind controls your opponent's creatures.
Beguiler of Wills.
Yeah.
Yes, that was a sick card, dude.
He has that, and Estradi doesn't have an answer to it, but he has like a couple random creatures. And Martell is at like a life total, I think it was 7, where this random 3/3 or whatever, he was at a certain life total where one moment of heroism, the +2/+2 in lifelink spell, would not kill him, but two of them would. So it's like either he had a 2/2 and Tom was at 6, or he had a 3/3 and Tom was at 7, or whatever. But he attacks with his creature, and then he, like, really fast before Tom can block, plays moment of heroism on the creature. And Tom says, okay. And then he really quickly, like, taps another 2 mana and moves another card, like, to the front of his hand and starts to put it toward the board. And Tom's like, wait. I'll block your guy with my Beguiler. And Estradi just lets him chump block. He just didn't have it. It was a land.
The shit that we do. That's insane.
That's insane, right? It's so insane. People were talking about
felt
that,
like a dick.
Second,
like, oh, my God.
Mental sport.
You just got me.
Mental sport. Let's look at Shout of Yasoka. We were just speaking of control, and Sid, you did save you get on your back foot. That kind of, you know, happened. I like this deck. I thought this was pretty sick here. I like some of the things he did. 1 Ugin Spirit Dragon, 2 Dragon Lord, Silumgars, which I think was right. I think a lot of people in the tournament were running 1, but number. He's also got 3 Icefall Regents, which is also pretty sweet, and 1 Silumgar, the Drifting Death. So this is kind of like Dragon Esper, Dragon Control, minus not with the Jutai. 2 Bioblights, 3 Digs, 2 Dissolve, 2 Foul Tongue Invocations. Card surprised
the card is
me.
Insane.
Yeah,
the
really surprised insane. Me. It's not... God, I wish we had Devour Flesh still, but I'll take this. I mean, the gain 4 life is really relevant, so...
Yeah, this deck seems,
it's an edict.
It seems like a really good blue-black deck. If I had to play a control deck, I would play the Channel Fireball one with Ojutai. I don't know, I just really like Ojutai.
Yeah, no, that's just a sick list too.
I like Yusuke's, the Stratus Dancer in the sideboard is really cool, because like, he can bring it in against mono red, and like, set up a turn where like, he can live through a command or whatever, and like, just block with it if he wants to. There's just like, a lot of stuff he can do with the Stratus Dancer, and it's like, insane in the control mirror, because you just like, get it underneath, and they don't have Bioblight left in, or removal left in. They have, you know, minimal, they have just downfalls or whatever.
Yeah, and then you get just, a like, sweet attacker.
Sneak it in, and just like, counter their first card draw spell, and attack for 20 with it. Like, it's just awesome.
The rest of Shouta's spells are 3 downfall, 3 Jace Ingenuity, 1 cut, 4, this was kind of the all-star in this deck all weekend, 4 Silumgar Scorn.
Yeah, I think it was great to be on that card for this tournament. I think that card was really good.
Yeah.
And really underrated at first.
Yeah, Counterspell is pretty damn good, wouldn't you know. 2 Ultimate Price. Yeah, that
you,
seems
you forgot the good you forgot the sorceries.
Oh, sorceries, 3 Crux of Fate and 2 Thoughtseize. His sideboard, a Bioblight, 2 Disdainful Strokes, 3 Duress, 1 Alter Price, a Dragon Lord's Prerogative, a Gate, two Stratus Dancers, three Drown in Sorrows, and this one I thought was a virulent. I can't say it when I'm drunk. We know this, guys.
Virulent plague.
Virulent plague. I hate my mouth when I'm drunk. It doesn't work.
I love your mouth when you're drunk.
He got a little pretty mouth, ain't he?
When you get to that just right damn, drunk, Sid, where
you,
like,
Sid, you beat me to it.
You're not aware of anything that's you happening around you. You guys are disgusting.
But that was a sick blue-black control list. Shout out to Shota. He did
this
thing.
This is a good deck, but in that finals match with your opponent on the plate, you really needed your opponent to make one of those, you know, grievous misplays in order to have, like, an even chance. And that shit wasn't happening, dude. Dang played every single, you know, thing perfectly.
Fair.
There was a turn, I think it's just the last turn of the tournament, where, like, he doesn't have to cast, like, he really has nothing to lose if he doesn't cast, like, the strike and the command right away, and he, like, thinks about it for a while, and, like, when he attacks, he just, like, casts them both and wins the Pro Tour. But, like, they're talking about, the commentators were talking about it, too. They're like, like, maybe he won't, you know, but, like, he doesn't really lose much because, like, he's going to burn him out anyway, and, like, even if he downfalls the Swift Spear in response, like, the burn spells still do whatever they would have done anyway. It's just they would have done more with the creature in play. But, yeah, it's like, he made a lot of really good decisions. Like, it was weird because he drew the Virulent Plague in Game 3 of the Finals and just did it to kill a bunch of Hordling Outburst tokens and just still didn't win. Like, the Rabble Master was still just sitting there as a 2-2, and it was still good. It was weird.
Yeah, I mean, you got to answer everything.
Yeah, that's the problem. He has to, like, tech, so. Any random assortment of 1-1s and 2-2s will just kill him if he doesn't present, you know, a dragon.
Yeah.
A drifting dagger.
I mean, we saw plenty of times on the weekend people I saw people using Heroes Downfall on 1-1 tokens.
Yeah.
Sometimes you're forced to do it.
You got to that point, but
fuck it.
Dang, to get to the finals, be out another blue-black control deck in Adrian Sullivan, and Adrian's got a much different take on this list. Does someone want to run through this real fast?
Yeah. So,
by the way, this guy Dang's on fire, dude. Like, to get the pairings that he did to win this
Sid,
Pro
shut
Tour,
the fuck
like.
Up. Sid, shut up.
No, that's true, right. Though. He did get some good. I mean, every deck he played was slow.
All right, Ryan, shut up.
Yeah, Abzan Troll.
This is
Blue-Black.
This is the blue black version that I really liked was Adrian Sullivan's because he had two Pats and one Liliana in the main with two Ugins. Sorceries, he had one Crux of Fate, one Drown in Sorrow, Instance, four Bile Blight, three Dig Through Times, one Dissipate. Four Dissolve, one Dragon Lord's Prerogative, which when you hit is insane. Four Heroes Downfall, two Jace's Ingenuity, two Silence the Believers, one Ultimate Price, one Aether Spout, and three Perilous Vault. 27 lands.
This is why I thought he was favored in that matchup against Dang, is because of all the blue-black decks at the Pro Tour, we saw a lot of people were cutting Radiant Fountain, especially I think in the Esper list, but Radiant Fountain here I thought would have been really good, especially too because he's got Purrlake to keep recycling it, and his board also has things like Drown in Sorrow, and he was the only one I saw, at least that I can remember, that was running Farika's here.
Wait, this fool has Purrlake? I don't see Purrlake.
I didn't get to it yet. In the board, we have one more Pat, two more Dinosauros, another Aether Spout, one Purrlake Agent, one Tassiger, one Cranial Archive, two Disdainful Stroke, one Interpret the Signs, two Negate, one Farika's Cure, and two Thoughtseize. But going to the lands...
Cranial Archive does, right?
Of course.
Well, I mean, other players can't cast their Delve spells, but it seems really... That seems way too Adrian Sullivan.
I mean, Relic of Progenitus it is not, but it is an answer to a question that can cause this deck some problems. I would just run Tormod's Crypt, personally.
No, I think it's just so he doesn't deck himself.
No, yeah.
That's fair, too. That's a very valid point. Maybe he expected to see more Ashioks, because that, if you stick an Ashiok in this mirror and protect it, you're going to win the game.
Yeah, and you're also going to win the game even if they have a Cranial Archive in play, because they'll just remove your hand, and it doesn't matter. Because the cards are exiled anyway, so this doesn't actually help against...
Yeah, Ashiok fuck with the graveyard until she goes ultimate, man. She exiles everything.
You can just force it sitting against the mirror, and it's probably good. It replaces itself. And
I mean, makes it harder for them to delve. You get to that point, you don't want
to be casting digs on you. And it's like, reasonably good against the whip decks or the graveyard
decks.
Yeah,
that's what I had thought for it, was to act as more of like a Relic of Progenitus type effect against the whip deck.
Yeah, it replaces itself, so the opportunity cost is pretty low. So it's
one of the things that I was going to point out for the lands was he played 3 Radiant Fountain.
Yeah.
And personally, I would have went the full 4 and dropped one of these, you know, extra scry lands, whether it was Temple of Enlightenment or the one of Temple of Malady. I just think it would have helped him out a lot more against mono red. But...
Well, yeah, I still think even with 3 in this matchup, I thought at least in that matchup he was fair. I mean, Bob Maher said that they thought pre-board Sullivan was only had a 30% chance of winning game 30. 1, but 75% post-board. And he just got ranched. I mean, dang, just really
just ran him over.
I mean, they were over really.
You know, Ruben, I don't know if you caught this, but in an earlier match of Adrian Sullivan's in the semifinals, the extra scrylands had actually come in handy, because when you're playing Ashiok in your deck, sometimes you want to have access to different colored mana so you can activate like the monstrous of a Pelucranos or a Stormbreath Dragon that you've played off of your Ashiok.
Yeah, but he's playing 2, yeah, which is true. But he's playing 2 Opulent Palace, which allows him to do that anyway. It gives him green mana there.
Okay. So that was Adrian's deck. Who did Shouta beat?
I feel you. I feel what you're saying.
Shouta.
Thanks for feeling me.
Give your meat a good old rub.
Yeah, boy.
So let's see. Shouta beat Andres, then Strowski, the little kid. What was the young buck running? He was on this. They're calling it Green Devotion. It was like green red.
Yeah, it was green red.
Who wants to run through this?
Don't they actually call this deck little kid? Isn't this like?
Well, green white is little kid, isn't it?
Oh, okay.
But this is sweet. 2 Moonsaders, 4 Coursers, 4 Dragon Lord Atarka. He's not fucking around. 4 Elvish Mystic, 4 Pelucranos, 4 Rattleclaws, 2 Serac, the Hunt Callers, 4 Caryatid, and 4 Whisperwood Elementals. 4, this card surprised me, especially because a lot of people were like, what's the new one that you look at the top 6 and put 2 in that costs 3?
Collected Company.
Collected Company. A lot of people were saying that Collected Company was just a better card than this, but 4, see the Unwritten.
No, I mean, how is... You couldn't play Collected Company in this deck.
No, not in this deck. But I was surprised I didn't see Collected Company like anywhere. But here we are with a playset of CD Unwritten.
Yeah, this is like a combo deck in a way.
Yeah, exactly what he was saying.
Cast CD Unwritten with Ferocious and hit Dragon Lord Atarka and Serac the Hunt Caller, and then attack them with a hasty 8/8 flyer after you're at their board.
Yeah, this is probably one of the more, like, I don't want to say broken, but definitely bent things that you can do in Standard right now. I mean, obviously, there's a lot of risk that you're taking on by playing all these, like,
mana
dorks and shit. But, I mean, it's very powerful late game. Probably one of the most powerful in Standard.
I think these are one of, well, to point out 2 things he said. He wasn't a huge fan of Serac, and he wasn't a huge fan of Boonsader, but they were necessary evils for Seether Unwritten, you know, just to get that ferocious off.
Yeah.
And, I think, to be fair, Boonsader is good against control, and this was a control-heavy... It was a pretty control-heavy meta.
Yeah.
I think Boonsader is really good against control.
He's not really, as you see, as Ryan said, he wasn't really fucking around. Like, he's playing 4 Seether Unwritten, but he's playing 4 legendary copies of like Pelucranos and 4 copies of Atarka, you know, their legendary creatures.
Yeah, he's all out.
So. Yeah, he's like, fuck it, I want to get these guys out and attack you.
He's also got 4 Whisperwoods, which is
sweet
insane,
against
control also, which kind of... I don't know. I think that match could have gone either way.
I think this deck going forward with some tweaks, I think this can be a real fucking thing.
It's missing mastery of the
unseen. It's so weird. It's just like, it's super dedicated. It's like...
Yeah, what is his sideboard? Run it off here.
It's 4 Nissa Worldwaker, 4 Nylea's Disciple, 3 Xenagos the Reveler, 3 Arbor Colossus, and 1 Voyaging Satyr.
So 5 cards.
It is 5 different cards, but it's nobody plays sideboard 4 ofs anymore. Like, this is the new standard, and even modern too. Like, all the decks are built these days with like 2/2, 1/1/1, 2 all
yeah,
my
one ofs.
Are 2 ofs and 1 ofs.
Yeah.
I rarely have any.
I love this sideboard. This is the kind of sideboard I love. I mean, I love my 3s and 4s of. He knows what he wants to beat. He knows what matchups he's got a good game one against, and he knows what he needs to, you know, really change out to make his post-board game strong in the weak matchups. Yes, like, I like that.
4 Nissas and 3 Xenagos for control decks.
Yep.
And then he has 4 Nylea's Disciple and probably the 3 Xenagos for the burn decks.
Yep.
And then he has, like, Nylea's Disciple and Arbor Colossus for the Mantis Rider Stormbreath Dragon decks. Like, it's cool because it's, like, 4 ofs, but they're 4 ofs.
And the Voyaging Satyr in the mirror, you know, when you're on the play, you just want to be that much faster.
Yeah, I don't know. I'd probably board the Voyaging Satyr in against... Like, he also probably boards out Caryatids against control because they don't do anything.
Well, he doesn't play Caryatids.
No, he plays 4.
Oh, yeah, that's right. That's right.
Boards out the Caryatid and boards in the Voyaging Satyr because he goes from 12 mana creatures down to 8 mana creatures, then back up to 9. So he probably still wants to be able to go from 2 to 4, you know, from mana creature into Xenagos, Pelucranos, or Surok. Reliably, but he's taking out 4 of the ways to do that so that his threat density is higher. So it makes sense, actually.
You probably bring in Voyaging Satyr in a match where you're also likely to be able to have the devotion to abuse the Nykthos Shrine of Nyx with it, because really that's what that card is like another copy of Nykthos.
It's also like having a Sylvan Caryatid that attacks for 1 against control, kind of cool.
But you could have Rattleclaw Mystic that attacks for 2. That's twice as much. Yeah, he has
4 of them, and he's got them for sure.
Yeah, this was pretty sweet. Let's see. Moving back to the quarterfinals, we just talked about Andres. He played Andrew Olschwager, who we said earlier played him in the quarterfinals. And Andrew was, as we mentioned, he was on blue-black control running. He was more on the... Actually, this is Esper, because he's running a Jutai, so... He's on that Esper control.
He has 8 dragons.
Yeah, 2 is Yutai, 2 Dragonlord Silumgar, 2 Icefall Regent, and 2 Silumgar, the Drifting.
Is that 2 decks in the top 8 with Icefall Regent in it?
It is.
Yeah, suck it, Jason. I went on a spoiler show, and I'm like, hey, this card just got spoiled today. It's pretty cool. They're like, it dies Lightning Strike. I'm like, oh, okay, well, it's pretty sweet.
I fucking hate that argument.
But
it has to be in context. Like, if you're playing a deck where, like, your creature's living matters, like, I'm known for playing the Jeskai deck or whatever, like, I wasn't too high on Icefall Region in Jedi because, like, you really want, like, all your threats to be at, because you have so many bad, like, you have, like, Wild Slashes and Lightning Strikes that just don't do anything in some matchups, so, like, there's no way you're going to be able to deal 20 damage to, like, Control or, like, some of the Abzan decks if your creatures don't live. Uh-huh. And, like, I wasn't thrilled on Icefall Region in that deck. So, like, because of the Doomblade argument. So you can make it sometimes, but here...
This,
like,
guy's dope.
Yeah.
It's kind of a removal spell.
Yeah, I like it. It's pretty damn good. Even just if you get a turn or two of tempo out of it, and then they kill your Icefall Regent. Like, a lot of times, that's just fine, because...
And it says you ain't stoking this motherfucker until, like, turn 6 something, man.
Say, by the time you've killed it, you've already cast, like, a Dragon Lord's Prerogative, or a Dig Through Time, or an Anticipate.
Yeah, you don't even care anymore.
and you've got some card selection and card draw, and then they kill it. Well, at this point, now you're reloaded. It could handle the threat you had to tap down with it
Even if they have to untap, tap 5 mana and Heroes Downfall it, their creatures stay tapped for a whole turn.
Yeah.
And you got their attack step and all their mana.
Yeah. I think people are, like, forgetting that, like, how, like, good of a...
No, it's not like you lose because your guy died, like, you know, like the Jeskai deck or a... Or aggressive deck, and be like, oh man, my threat's dead now.
What the fuck is going on right now? Are y'all, like, in a birdcage or some shit?
I don't know what Ruben. I don't know what Ruben.
I'm laying the fuck down, doing nothing. So,
my cats are fighting wildly, but they're not making any noise right now. They're just looking at each other.
That's funny. No, so yeah, he's running the Esper. Let's see. He said we should go over this, Ruben.
Yeah, so it's 2 Dragon Lord of Jutai, 2 Dragon Lord Silumgar. 2 Icefall Regent, 2 Silumgar the Drift Deck, 2 Crux of Fate, 1 Sign in Blood, 3 Thoughtseize, 4 Anticipate, 2 Digs, 1 Dragonlord Prerogative, 3 Foul Tongue Infurcation, 3 Heroes Downfall, 4 Silumgar Scorn, and 2 Alter Price. And lands, like, of note, he's playing no Radiant Fountain, but 2 Haven of the Spirit Dragon. Yeah.
His sideboard is exactly what Kevin was just talking about, a bunch of one-ofs.
A bunch of one-ofs, yeah. One Foul Tongue, one Hero's Downfall, another Thoughtseize, one Pat, one Ashy, one Jurobai.
Two Jurobis.
Okay.
Jurobai Merclurkers.
Yeah, two Jurobi. Yeah, that thing right there. One Stratus Dancer, one Bob Light, three Drowning Sorrow, two Negate, one Perilous Vault, and one Virulent Plague.
That's good. This is more like, Kevin, this is like the Channel Fireball list you were more or less talking about with the Ojutais.
This deck's kind of cool. I mean, for a blue-black deck, it's definitely got a lot of threats.
Well, the reason why he's playing... So, I'm sorry, go ahead, Sid.
His instants bug me, though, man. You see, like, he's got four of a Dirtle-like Anticipate, which is merely okay, but he's only running two Dig Through Time. I thought Dig Through Time was kind of like the engine that you used in decks like this.
Well, I think the reason why in this deck, you might want them early so that you can get a dragon directly in your hand to make your Scorns and your Prerogatives better.
It looks like he wants to tap out a lot more. Than other
yeah, for sure.
Decks. So it
I mean, there's sense. Like, you could call any of these, I mean, given that some of them are legendaries, but you could call any of these creatures finishers. None of these guys are really utility. Icefall Regent, I guess, is somewhat utility. And then, you know, Ugin's a finisher. We're only used to seeing maybe like two or three finishers in the main deck of this kind of shell.
When you have four Salungar Scorn, is a reasonable, like, you just protect it. And the thing about Salungar's Scorn is that, like, because it only works when you have a dragon in hand or in play, if you don't have another dragon in hand...
Or if it's, like, turn one through five when people are tapping out and you just force-spike them, like gets the job done.
You're incentivized to protect your dragon with Salungar's Scorn, because if you don't have another one, it doesn't work anymore afterwards. So, like, sometimes you'll make, like, in other control decks, like, protecting your win conditions is sometimes wrong. Like, with the old blue-white deck, like, they'd be like, downfall your Jace, and you'd be like, let it happen, like, save my Dissolve, or downfall your Elspeth, let it happen, draw 10 cards, win later on. But, like, now, like, your counterspell has a condition, so, like, you want to counter their removal on your threats a lot, so that the rest of the time when you draw the counterspell, it'll still be live. So sometimes they just won't have another removal spell, and your dragon will 20 them. And it's, like, kind of weird that you blew your counterspell so early, but you didn't have a choice. So, like,
Silengar's score with Icefall Regent seems so dirty, too, because you're guaranteed a mana advantage, because they got to pay that two extra to even try to do anything.
Yeah.
And then you counter their spell for two mana. It's just wicked, dude.
Pretty gross.
It is.
Pretty good.
In this meta.
Let's take a look at the next quarterfinal matchup. Let's see, Jason Chung on one of my favorites, Red-Green Dragons. So this is like the mid-range deck CVM took down the open with. It's a little different. Four Boonsaters, four Mystic, four Rabble Masters, three Heir of the Wilds, four Rattleclaw Mystics, four Stormbreath Dragon, three Serac the Hunt Callers, four Thunderbreak Regents, four Crater's Claws, a Roast, two Draconic Roar. Lands of Node are one Haven of the Spirit Dragon, two Mana Confluence. His sideboard as well, not many cards, a Roast, couple Arc Lightning, three Wild Slash, three Xenagos, two Revelry, three Hornet's Nest, spicy on the weekend, and one Plummet.
Hell yeah.
So, yeah, this list is sweet. Expect to see a lot of these Red-Green Dragons list.
Obviously. Can't believe it, man. Open, there's but... like...
Yeah, you can
There's
roast
not Pelucranos in sight.
Yeah, roasting a hornet's nest, pretty gross. So Sam Black did a lot of that on the weekend. Let's see, Martin Dang in his quarterfinals against Marco Camaluzzi. Marco, I think someone said it earlier, was on Abzan Control.
Yeah, I've got his list in front of me if you want me to run through it. No Caryatids. There's three Elspeth, a Liliana, and an Ugin. The standard four Courser, four Rhino, two Tasigur. And then there's like... two and two for Bioblight and Ultimate Price. Two main deck Utter End, four Downfall, four Charms, one End Hostilities main deck, four Thought Seizes, and then he has two Duresses in the board, two Nissas in
That's
the board.
That's the only Dragons of Tarkir card in the whole deck.
Yeah.
Is two Duress, and that's it.
He probably used his, old what was it, Onslaught too. Or whatever. Yeah.
So yeah, this is so sweet, though.
Old dragon cards.
It's old, good old reliable. I mean, it's been there.
No, he has the two Ultimate Price in the main.
Oh, yeah. That's right. Sorry.
This is, yeah, it's okay. good old reliable.
Another reprint.
Control. Oh, that's right. Yeah, Ultimate Price. So Let's see, that was Marco, and then
this guy was on his way to the Pro Tour, and he's like, "Oh man, I forgot to buy cards from that new set."
Yeah,
Ultimate Price and Duress is in it. Those cards are cool. Yeah,
good thing he still has his Mono Black Devotion deck from last year. He just took those out of it and played it.
Yeah,
Thomas Hendricks.
Ultimate Prices and Duresses. Woohoo!
Thomas Hendricks was our last quarterfinalist against Adrian Sullivan. Thomas Hendricks was on, Green Red Devotion. Little different. Two Zenigos.
Very different from Martin Dang's Green Red deck.
Well, and very, very, this is different even from, Andre's, Green Red Devotion. So he's got an Arbor Colossus, four Courser, three Dragon Lord of Tarkas, four Mystic, four Hydra, a Hornet Queen, four Pelucranos, two Shaman of Forgotten Ways. For those that don't know, that is a new one, Mythic Rare. You can add two mana in any combination. It's a for two and a green, you get a 2/3 creature that you tap, add two mana in any combination of colors to your mana pool. Spend this mana only to cast creature spells. And this is Sid's favorite part. If you have Formidable for nine and two green, you could tap it and you, what's it called, Sid? Biorhythm?
Why do I gotta be into the fucked up 11 mana activated abilities? Oh, I like it because I know like the name like of that. The card.
Yeah, I mean, okay. It's got Biorhythm on it, man. That's pretty sick.
I don't
sick.
Give a fuck about Biorhythm. I'll play creatures.
You're the only one that's ever talked about Biorhythm on the cast.
Nah,
just
that's
go with
because
it.
I fucking know about all the cards and shit. I play Commander, bro.
You play Biorhythm all the time. Just go with it.
No, I mean, obviously, this was a cool card for this particular top eight with so many control decks around. I could see where this would just like, if you can manage to get Formidable on board and on tap with this guy, you just, you know, drain him. I don't think that ever happened.
I think the ramp was with it is nuts. His lands of note for Nykthos. Aside from the Shaman of Forgotten Ways, he has four Caryatid, four Voyaging Satyr, and four Whisperwood Elementals. His board is the rest of the Zenogos, an Ugin, two Rexages, another Arbor Colossus, another Hornet Nest. One Hornet Nest, a Seismic Rupture, which was awesome this weekend.
Yep.
Three Nissa World Wakers and four Nylea's Disciple. So those were our top eight decks. Pretty sweet. A lot of variety there outside of, we had some repeats, but within all of those decks, there was quite a bit of variation.
Tell you now, anyone playing red, pick up your Seismic Ruptures, put them in the board. You're going to need them.
And if you want to get an idea of what we're going to see going forward, I'll post in the show notes the decks that got 24 to 27 points in standard. We had Brad Nelson, who finished 9-1 in standard. His Abzan aggro. I mean, there's the
Channel
Fireballs control. So there's things to look at that did well that didn't necessarily top eight that you might want to check out. Kevin, you played something different the other day. You went to States, right?
Yep.
Excellent. What did you rock there?
I played pretty close to the same 75 that Patrick Dickman played at the Pro Tour. Alright, so real quick, I've been testing this weird Jeskai deck that was like God's Willing Monastery Mentor and Ojutai Exemplar, and I wanted to play that deck, and I got stage fright at the last minute and like didn't play it, and I was riding up to States and I was watching the coverage or listening to it, and this Patrick Dickman deck came on, and it was like a slower Jeskai deck. It was like a blue-red dragon control deck splashing Valorous Stands and Dragon Lord Ojutai. Those were the only white cards in the entire deck. And I figured out 32 of the 35 spells that he was playing from the deck tech and messed up the other three and just added Soulfire Grandmasters. And then, I got States a little late, got a game loss for being late or not having my deck list done in time because I couldn't switch all the cards over. And
tournament success rule number one, show up early.
He still top eighted, so
yeah, I still top eighted. One of my friends from high school was playing like his first tournament in a long time, and he beat me at 4-0. He was playing Abzan control, and he was the only person that beat me in the Swiss. And then it was discovered in before top eight that I messed up my deck again, so I got a game loss for that because I was in such a rush that I wrote three or four Temple of Epiphany, one Temple of Triumph. But I had 3-2 because I didn't own the fourth Temple of Epiphany, so I didn't have time to like fix it. So I got a game loss for that, and then I lost to Rug like Teemer Monsters or whatever in top eight. But the deck felt really good. It was like Dickman's deck is under 18 to 21 points or whatever. You can find it if you want to look at it, but it's like a bunch of Draconic Roars, Silumgar Scorns, Valorous Stances, 4 Thunder Breaks, 3 Ojutais, 2 Icefall, 1 Storm Breath, 3 Dig Through Time, 4 Anticipate, 25 Lands, some Wild Slashes, 2 Main Deck Anger of the Gods. It was really good. It felt a little weak to Coursers, but that's because the 3 cards that I messed up that ended up being Grandmasters were two more Valor Stances to kill Coursers, and an Aether Spout, which kills everything that attacks you. So I ended up...
Seems really good right now.
Yeah, going forward, I probably would end up just cutting the Aether Spouts and one of the main deck Stubborn Denials, which that's crazy. He had main deck Stubborn Denials. That's so badass. He had
so many tokens, you don't maybe think Aether Spouts might be worth keeping a one of, or...
Maybe. I want to play 2 Soulfire Grandmasters because I think the card's pretty good going long.
Yeah.
And in the matchups where Valor Stance can have a good target, keeping that creature alive and then buying back an Anticipate or a Dig Through Time is a really good source of card advantage to get to the late game. But it's nice to have a speed bump too when you're pretty much a control deck. So going forward, yeah, I would probably chop out one of the Denials and the one Aether Spouts for 2 Grandmasters. But, you know, you could just play it the way it was listed too. It's not a huge deal to do it one way or the other. But the deck felt great. It had 4 Ravelmasters in the sideboard to beat up on blue-black control because your threats are a little expensive and weak to, like, Scorn and Dissolve. So post-board, you board in 4 Ravelmasters when they take out their Bioblights and they leave their Drowns in the sideboard. And then you win game 2 in, like, 5 minutes. And that happened a few times over the weekend. He had a Dragonlord's Prerogative in the sideboard, too. And, like, I drew that card against blue-black control and, like, cast it and revealed a dragon. And it was just, like, it was insane. Like, I don't think they could ever really beat that if your deck is just filled with threats.
Prerogative seems good. I got my playset for $1, which I thought was kind of funny. There's kind of no respect to draw, but...
I feel like a foil one of those would be, like... All those EDH fanatics would gobble that up. That seems like
it's probably like $20 right now.
It might be a good
pick. $10 foil for sure.
So one of the highlights from this Pro Tour, I mean, you guys noticed, we were talking about it before the cast, was we were joking around because someone on the page called this Pro Tour Yu-Gi-Oh! How many people at the end of this thing were disqualified? My count was at 4, if I'm not mistaken.
Disqualified? 2.
Okay, that's right. There's an investigation on 1.
I mean, maybe 3. I know the disqualifications were Jeremy Dazani for misrepresenting the game state on day 1.
So what does misrepresenting the game state exactly mean?
Yeah, did anybody report about this?
It can mean anything. It can mean a lot of different things. But in that case, it probably means that his opponent did something, and then he did something, and then the judge asked what happened, and he didn't tell the truth. Whether it was, like, a horrendous error in that he, like, just remembered it wrong, or he was trying to... Or he was in an argument where, like, his opponent believed something different than what he believed, and he tried to gain an advantage by telling the judge something like that. That's usually... Misrepresenting the game state either means that, like, he put something literally somewhere where it wasn't supposed to be, and, like... are pretending that it's supposed to be there.
Is someone eating their microphone?
Yeah, it sounds like someone's fucking eating Cheetos or some shit, right?
Something crazy. I heard that. That wasn't me. That was crazy.
Dude, K-Fed, there's always some fucked up shit going on in the background. Right here. So last time it was a fucking doorbell, and now your cats are like fucking with newspapers and Cheetos. Like,
I was eating you, before. I wasn't
you wild, Cheetos. Bro.
I ate like a few sweet tarts stuff. I got away with it. You guys didn't even notice.
No. Bro.
Yeah, you need
to be hooking it up with the fucking...
So, I mean, God, a lot of scandals. So there was the misrepresenting the board state. There was the...
Palming.
Andrew Speck. Am I wrong on that name? Fuck.
It's Steven Speck.
Steven Speck.
Unfortunately, sad news...
Wait, Steven Speck ain't that motherfucker that won that GP with Verdant Bloom or some shit? Or
yes.
The Bloom deck.
2 Grand Prix top 8 with Amulet and a... Star City Premier IQ win and another Star City event second place, all with the Amulet, all in the frame of like 3 or 4 months.
Bro, this guy has totally been fucking us the whole time.
He's doing this the whole time, exactly.
And just killing it.
Well, good thing that people kind of were suspicious after how many turn 1 kills he had it.
Well, I was going to say that, like, I know personally where...
They said he turned 1 to a bunch of people at Omaha and at Vancouver.
And then, so, essentially, he would palm, like, the perfect hand, and his opponent was, I believe, Ray Perez Jr., and hit Ray's teammates, you know, they were kind of on to this guy. They were suspicious after Omaha. So, basically, when the guy went to present his deck to Ray was just snap judge call.
Yeah, he got disqualified for what they called manipulation of game materials. Yeah. He had presented a 53-card deck and had a 7-card hand that the judges called quote-unquote suitable, but was probably just perfect. Yeah. Set off to the side. Like, the first time I heard about it, they were like, he quote-unquote palmed the perfect 7 and snuck it on top of his sideboard and then presented a 53-card deck. So I don't know if the intent is to draw 7 cards and then swap them out real quick, or just like draw your fake hand. I don't know. It's crazy.
So wait, he hands it to me and has 53 cards?
Yeah.
See, you ain't gonna get me with that shit because I pile shuffle my opponent's decks in fucking competitive or higher, man.
We're talking about a guy that got pros, though. I mean, well, he got pro. He's been getting pros and high level grinders for a long time.
He probably dumps his deck.
Okay, so be early to the tournament. Count your opponent's deck. These are things anybody can do. That's good.
You really pile shuffle your opponent's deck? God, that's time consuming.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I know, dude. And I fucking. And people get tilted about it and shit, and like I use that to my advantage, man. Like, you know, I don't play competitively anymore.
Can you do that?
Yeah, you
can shuffle their deck. Yeah,
you're allowed to pile shuffle your opponent's deck. Pile shuffling is not considered randomization, and any pile shuffling that occurs once the pile shuffling stops and regular shuffling begins is when the judge considers the deck to begin being randomized. So if I sit down and pile shuffle my deck like 5 times and then riffle shuffle once and present, I didn't shuffle my deck at all and I'll get a game loss. But if I pile shuffle.
You don't have to pile shuffle. You can just like count the cards like one on top of the other if you want, but it's just quicker to pile shuffle usually.
I mean, you can pile your opponent's deck, but it doesn't count as shuffling your opponent.
Yeah. This isn't the point of the pile shuffle though. It's
counting. Sure that they don't have 53 cards.
Yeah.
They're cheating you.
Count those cards, man, because even like, you know, before the sideboarding rules changed, I got a game win in a PTQ because a legal deck size was presented to me. You know, there's one extra card and it sucks, but you know, like you gotta grasp at every advantage that you can when you're, you know, playing at that level.
Yeah, I mean, if my opponent in a sealed PTQ or whatever, or like even in a constructed tournament, if they like sideboarded, you know, like an entire deck in or whatever, I might count it just to make sure they didn't mess up. I don't know, even shuffling your opponent's deck at all is a pain. You know, I only do it at Comp Ariel because you have to. But like, if I'm just in like FNM, I'm not gonna shuffle my opponent's deck. I'm just like cut.
Well, let me ask you: have you ever been beaten by this guy,
Steven? No, yeah. I actually roomed with him for a Grand Prix, and I didn't know he was a cheater. Obviously. Yeah,
you're talking about that. Maybe he wasn't always a cheater, but, you know, he just... To be fair, I mean, like, does he have to pay back any of those thousands of dollars he won when he's scumming the shit out of everybody?
No.
Like, seriously, this is, like, the easiest fucking hustle for scumbags to pick up on because we're so passive as a community. Like, you know, other places, like, if you were doing this shit on, like, World Poker Tournament, they'd, like, have lawyers, like, 5 feet up your ass, like, trying to get
if
that money out of you.
You were cheating at, like, anything else, like, God knows what could happen, you know?
Yeah, and we're so passive, like, we don't do any kind of, like, actual punishment. It's just like, okay, well, you can't play with us anymore.
Yeah, nothing.
Big fucking deal. You got away with all of this money by scamming, dude.
I think it's good that nobody sets like a violent precedent or whatever. That would be a little dangerous if, like, you know what I mean?
Helene Bourgeot takes you out back and hammers.
Yeah, just like if she like fucking Ronda Rousey's you.
He's got like threats. People called him like called his job and threatened violence against him.
Who?
Trevor Humphreys. After he got banned for the cheating, like the stacking his opponent's deck.
That's crazy. Like, calling someone's work.
Bro, I don't know, man. Like, when you know that you've been cheated, you just feel so shitty. Because, like, I remember finding out when I was very new to Magic, Innistrad was, like, the draft format. And I had a Bloodline Keeper in my deck, and it was sick. And I played this dude in round one that would, in response, tap my Bloodline Keeper in response to activation with an Avacynian Priest. And being a new player, I didn't understand that that was fucking bullshit. And he totally scummed me. And to this day, it just pisses me off to think about that, you know? Like,
maybe he didn't even know. Bad.
Like,
maybe he didn't know.
I'm still here because I could see people like having that happen to them and just not playing anymore.
I mean, things happen and people don't know. There was a call during the Pro Tour where Shahar and I believe Yelger got a game warning for not maintaining proper game state because Shahar cast a spell That didn't have, I don't believe it had a legal.
Yeah, it was a bolster effect that he had targeted an illegal target with, because you don't actually target anything with bolster, you choose it. Yeah. So you can do it to like shroud creatures and stuff. Yeah, that was on both of them, you know, for not maintaining proper game state. When you're playing at the Pro Tour, especially in the feature match area, this is it, man. You better play like absolutely perfectly, like our Pro Tour champion did.
Well, that brings me to my next point, which was kind of the big contentious debate of this, the fucking Patrick Chapin game loss call in the critical game three that was going to turns. And he had that game
in turns.
Yeah, it was in turns. He had the game. In fact, I believe he would have got it on turn five. He activates a Johnny. He looks at the cards, sets the one down on the table, bottoms the others, and I guess put the card in his hand and picked his hand up, and then the judge stepped in. I had seen it wrong earlier. What I was arguing on the page was I thought the judge stepped in before he even picked the cards up, and that's what he was arguing to Tessitore, the head judge, was, I never even picked the cards up, and this judge stepped in, and he even asked, when is a card considered drawn? Because he said, I put it here, but I didn't move my cards around, I made no motion, and he said he didn't pick his hand up, but the camera, apparently Sid and Ruben corrected me, he did pick the cards up.
He counted out the four cards, and then he put the one that it was three lands and a Tassiger. So a Johnny can only take the Tassiger.
Yep.
Took the Tassiger and dropped it on top of his hand, but he put it at an angle. You could tell originally when it first happened, you could tell which card it was because, you know, the cards were in his two or three other cards in hand were in a neat stack. Yeah. And this card was like laying on top of him at an angle. But then he started, like, then the judge came. He had moved them closer to, like, together, but you could still tell where it was, but it definitively touched his hand, which is like the thing that matters.
Is the fact that, so what really mattered was the fact it touched any of the other cards in the hand, like whether he moves them around or not.
Like when Patrick started to lift the cards off of the table as one group, that's your hand, bro. That's your hand.
And is that when the judge stepped in? Because I think that was the contentious moment. And I think a lot of people maybe got caught up in the moment like I did and like Chapin did and kind of thought the judge jumped in too early.
Yeah.
Before he even picked up the cards. And that's kind of what Chapin seemed to be arguing. And that's what
didn't step in too early. How many people were fucking cheating at the Pro Tour? Like, those judges got to be like on that shit.
Well, they're the best.
Those guys
don't
have an easy job. Yeah.
Which is another thing we talked about before the cast, this rule kind of being good at events where you have a bunch of level ones, maybe a level twos head judging the event, and this kind of clarity, there's no gray area here kind of rule when you have those levels of judges, I think is fine. When you're Pro Tour, you're all the level fours and the one or two level fives in the world are here. I think that at this level of judge, they should be able to, I guess they should be able to kind of judge intent.
You can't go after intent, dude, because nobody intends to play sloppy. But the fact is that when you play sloppy, you break the game rules and you're not playing like a pro, man. You're there to do your job, man. Like, it is easy to feel bad for Patrick Chapin because we love Patrick Chapin, dude.
What do you think about the land thing?
Well, before we get to the land thing, hold on, because Sid just said the thing about the intent and all that stuff and the sloppy play. I this was my argument here. I disagree with that, with the sloppy play. You know, he should know better. He's a pro and he's fucking human.
Everybody makes mistakes, man.
Everybody makes mistakes. He's okay, in a high pressure situation.
But you can't make him there. That's what Sid's saying, though, is you can't make a mistake at that.
Yeah, if GSP drops his hand, it's a lot of money. He's knocked the fuck out and like is, you know, has his neck broken or some shit.
Okay, guess what? He's human.
Yeah, he's human.
I mean,
anybody who's ever played a combat sport or anybody who's ever been in a fight has been knocked the fuck out. It's happened.
How many
You're
times
human.
Does an MLB kicker drill somebody in the head?
Yeah. Like, how many times exactly. These are world-class pitchers who can control a curveball at 85 miles an hour and something gets away with them and they fucking crush somebody in the face.
It happens. Yeah. Everyone is human.
You can make calculated play mistakes, and you can make actual mistakes revolving around the fact that you're sitting in a chair holding magic cards and doing things with them. And I don't always feel like those mistakes, but it's impossible to because he could have been cheating. We know it was Chapin. We know he wasn't.
You're saying even at level 4, level 5, you just judging intent is something you just can't do.
I think judging intent is the slipperiest slope, and I think it's even more dangerous than Chapin getting in trouble for that.
Fair. Well, here is what I think on that. Judging intent where this is okay, so my argument is this special area for this corner case. It's King of the Hill, right? The King of the Hill seat. It's a special area. They keep fucking with him, let me see your hand, when you look at the cards off of Johnny, let me see them so we can fucking write him down, and let me look at your sideboard and let me do this, stop play, okay, go ahead and play, do all that stuff. I think in this area, judging intent and everything, you shouldn't be judging intent, because I think you have the cameras and you have the videos, and since you fuck with them so much in this area, there should be special rules for this area.
He said he felt rushed, that he had been told for the expediency of the tournament pick play-up, but...
Yeah, that, and also when he... The problem I had with this is when he took the four cards off of the Ajani, you will see he takes the cards and he tilts them for the spotter. And that was part of his argument. It's I showed the guy my cards. The guy sitting behind me or whatever.
Yeah,
Ajani says you reveal a card. That means one card, not all the cards.
I dig what you're saying.
Completely passed by that.
Yeah. Yes, he did.
I think if the spotter saw it, maybe there's a case.
I got to respect Chapin. He had the balls, dude, because he knew he fucked up, but he was going to argue the fuck out of that shit. If there's any way that I can reverse this, I've got to.
His three things were
I don't think they should have
shown it all.
Rolling the cameras when he was arguing, I think it was really bad.
Yeah, that.
No, I think that was great, dude. That's Pro Tour history right there, man.
Yeah, no, but here's the thing, in that instant, the first explanation Chapin gives, and then the explanation why he gets the game loss from the top judge is a learning experience. After that, if there's anything more that needed to be added, they should have went away.
I just think that once the first judge ruling came over and he appealed to the head judge, and then when it started to become an actual argument, I think is when they should have cut away, because they end up showing his opponent starting to have a pretty shitty attitude.
Yeah.
And his opponent is rolling his eyes and making weird gestures. And then, I mean, that could be, it could be language.
Head judge, though, who is that guy? Do y'all know who that guy was?
Tessitore, man.
Ricardo Tessitore.
He's one of the
dude, that guy's stone cold. He comes up. He comes up and he seems so nice, He's I'll
so
be right
quiet,
back.
Right?
And he gives a story. It's like you're getting pulled over, right? And the deputy got you, but he had to call in the sergeant, right? Because you fucked up. And this sergeant comes up and he's like, hold on just a second. I'm going to get the story. You guys are going to be out of here. And then he just comes back. So nice, smile on his face. You going to jail, sucker?
Yeah, it was.
Dude, I mean, if that was me and that guy came up to me on a judge ruling, I would be flipping out, man. Hard to watch.
Hard shit. I think for me, my argument here for future pro tours, I think if you're gonna do this King of the Hill seat, and I think if you're gonna make it such a big deal, because they do make it a huge deal. It's let's check in on King of the Hill. Let's do this. Let's do that. I think there should be special rules for this because of the pressure they apply on that seat and the control they have of the tempo of the players. I think.
So do you think that it adds variance to it?
No, it adds added pressures.
I mean, it doesn't help. We've seen people deep in the tank get interrupted before.
Yeah, okay, they've actually stopped games.
I'm deep in the tank at the PT and fucking Rashad taps me on my shoulder to get a better look at my hand, I'm fucking punching.
Yeah, they've done that. They've moved guys'
it
hands
happens.
To
it
pick
happens.
Up the side to pick up to pick up the sideboard to see what they've sideboarded out.
Yeah,
they've taken guys' graveyards to count and show what's in the graveyard so they can see what they can do with their tassigers and shit. They absolutely do that. That's this is my whole point was if Chapin was wrong, sure. I think his argument was strong as in, you guys fucking with me. There's video. Look at the video. If it wasn't for you rushing me, if it wasn't for you doing this, maybe I wouldn't have fucked up
this
way.
They didn't go, the strongest thing I thought he had going for him was that they took no further game actions. He hadn't, they hadn't untapped or done anything with the
Tasiger. Yeah, he didn't switch the cards in a different way.
He showed
way.
His opponent the Tasiger, then his opponent knew, and then from there I was like, okay, no harm, no foul. But the rules, like Sid said, man,
the judge was watching him, man, because like two turns previous to that, he had played this read the bones, right?
Yeah.
And he just picks the two cards up and scoops them, man, and
puts them in his hand.
He's like, no, I meant to draw those cards. Like he knew like what they were already.
Yeah.
From a scry that was like at millisecond, you know?
Yeah. He made the mistake and he caught himself. He was like, I'm drawing the cards.
He did divination style, yeah. I like how he did that, though. He's like, yeah, I ain't fucking freaking out, dude. I'm cool. This is cool. But yeah, man, that sucks. Like, you're at the king of the hill, but that's his job, man. That's work sometimes. I got nothing. This is nothing personal to Chapin, but when you're playing at that level, like, you've got to be able to deal with that. That's your job.
I don't know.
Yeah. I don't know. I think in that moment, though, Sid's got a point. Like, you're already in.
No, Sid has a great point.
Just take it easy. At that point, there was absolutely, in fact, no need to rush because they weren't on a clock anymore. And he could just slow down, work through the turns. He had the game locked up. It's like the guy that we were talking about in the top eight. He had the game. And he just started rushing things, and
yeah, it gets like that. We've all been there before, man, where we get in a rush, and it sucks. Yeah. Kev, you ever been in the future match area and just felt like the environment would affect your game negatively?
So this is interesting. This is exactly like, it's a very similar thing. I'm playing on camera against Gerard Fabiano in Syracuse a few weeks ago.
Yep.
And it's game three. I'm playing Jeskai. Aggro, but it was like pretty mid-rangey by this point. I changed my deck around a lot. I sideboarded in a bunch of control cards, whatever. He's playing like this Jund deck. Like, it's like a Jund deck with some graveyard themes and like Whip and Outpost Siege and stuff.
Yeah, it's Gerard.
He finished like 11th or 9th? 9th. Something, yeah, 9th.
And,
oh, he was in the bubble, man.
Yeah.
It's game three. We're playing, and my hand is like, Disdainful Stroke, Valorous Stance, and then like a Dig Through Timer or a card draw spell or whatever. And so like, I know that I only have one stroke and he has a bunch of threats in his deck and not all of them are creatures. So like, I can't burn the stroke on the first thing he plays that matters. And he has like some lands and a Satyr Wayfinder and a Caryatid. And he plays the new Sidisi, the one the Demonic Tutors.
Okay.
And I'm like, oh man, well, I can Valorous Stance this if the exploit trigger works the way I think it does. Like, if it goes on the stack and, like, I can respond by killing the creature and then it's not there to see the other creature, whether the other creature gets sacked or not, like, it's not there to see that happen, then he doesn't get to Demonic Tutor and I get to get rid of his Sidisi. I don't have to worry about him tutoring up the best possible card and I still get to keep my counterspell. And so I ask the judge and the judge tells me that once it's in play, the trigger goes off even if Sidisi is not still there. So I say, okay. And I listen to the judge.
Well, with the exploit trigger on the stack that says you may sacrifice a creature, that's your last chance to remove the Sidisi before you get when the creature exploits, right?
You have to do it with the first trigger on the stack.
Yeah, you have to do it before they sacrifice their creature because, you know, otherwise that mechanic would be like fucking awful.
And if you do it, they can choose not to sack a creature. Or they can choose to still sack a creature and not Demonic Tutor if for some reason they, like, maybe there's a stab wound on a guy or whatever. You know, whatever corner case it is. Like, either you don't kill it, they sack a guy, they get to tutor. You do kill it, they sack a guy, they don't get to tutor. Or you do kill it, they don't get to tutor, but they can choose not to sack a guy. And
so you're here in the future match area.
Yeah, I'm not totally sure. But I wasn't sure, but I thought I could respond to the trigger, and the judge told me that I could respond to the trigger, but it wouldn't change anything. So I didn't want a Demonic Tutoring, so I Disdainful Stroke the Sidisi, and then he untapped and played Outpost Siege and Whip of Erebos, and I was losing the game.
And that,
I could have appealed to the head judge, but, like, Gerard was, like, rushing a little bit. And the judges were like, oh, you have this much time. I was like shuffling before game three and they were like, oh, you have this much time. And like it was just like it was, we were on camera, and you know we're both covered pretty heavily, so it was pretty intense. And game two was like really close, so like just a bunch of stuff. I was just like, I felt kind of rushed, and I was like, whatever. I don't think that like we're gonna finish this game in the amount of time we have anyway, so I'm just not gonna appeal, and that's probably stupid of me. But whatever, I don't want to take any more time up. I'll just go play the match. And I,
well, it seems if you want to be a pro Magic player, you have to develop, like, and this is probably what the greats have, is that intestinal fortitude of just being like, fuck you, judge, fuck you, coverage team. I'm here playing Magic, doing my job, doing what I do best, and I'm going to do what I do. And that's how Chapin got messed up.
Like
he
that,
didn't
man.
Do what he do. Well, you know,
Sid,
like,
I understand you're looking at it black and white, but there's a shit ton of gray there, dude.
Has anyone ever felt like
I ain't no Magic pro, man.
Yeah. Has anyone ever felt like bullied by a judge at a
bit of? I actually had that at an event where, and I was lucky that a good friend of mine was head judging the event, and I just like I was like, you know what? And I called him by his name. I was like, you know what? I need John. Like, bring John over here. And I was just like, yo, this judge is like just being a complete dick. And even like my opponent was like, yeah, like he's scaring me. I was like, see,
so what he
it's
do?
Not just me. He was like the both of us like we weren't tapping our fetch lands and stuff, and we were like we were going back and forth with like we were talking shit to each other basically.
Yeah.
And so like the first time he came over, he was like, and mind you, there was no kids there or whatever, but we weren't screaming at each other, we weren't doing anything. And actually,
were you talking point, about homeless guys that you beat up
no,
this week? Because people get fucking antsy about this shit.
No. So my opponent like Hurst, and he came over and he was like, if I hear something out of your mouth like that again, like, you know, I'm going to give you a game loss or whatever it was. And the guy was like, what the fuck? And he was like, what did you just say? And like after that, he was like on top of us. And then so I sacked Polluted Delta. I didn't tap it or anything. He goes, he was like right over his shoulder. He was like, the proper way to do that is to tap your land or whatever. He was like, next time you'll get a warning or whatever. And I'm like, what? And I just looked at him, and I looked
dude,
at my
y'all
opponent.
Done pissed
like,
that judge off, man.
Yeah, but I was
that's
like,
insane.
I was like,
just
what the hell?
Touching
like,
your fetch or tapping or moving your hand or whatever, all of that is
like
– like
the motion.
That's totally
yeah,
fine.
Exactly. I'm like –
nah,
you
I mean,
do
this
it,
judge
you can
was,
even do it at an angle.
He was on a tear for you.
Yeah, but, he was fucking with y'all because y'all were carrying on. And
like my opponent and I were having fun. Like at that point – at first, I wasn't cursing at all when the judge first said that. I hadn't cursed yet. But then I was just like, yeah, do me a favor, just like get John over here. And then when he came over, I'm like, dude, like this guy is just like over our shoulder. He's like really messing with us. Like it's really uncomfortable. We can't really get our game going or whatever. And so he asked the judge what happened. He was like, oh, this guy cursed. And he was like, and you stood here the whole time just to see if he cursed again? He was like, yeah. He was like, there's a lot of other people here.
That's ridiculous.
I mean, that can get you penalties in tournaments, though.
No, it can, but it was just ridiculous. First off, this wasn't a real – this was like, you know, a win a box, you know.
Yeah, this is no big deal. I was at States.
Three tournaments.
I was at States when Theros first came out. And
yeah, I went to that States too. That was sweet.
The guy I was playing an opponent. I was playing a deck I'd never played before. It was like I think I was on Blue White Troll, and I cast I think I cast a Rev. I was some draw, so I think Rev was still legal at that time. And I pick up the first card, or I cast my card, and he says okay. And so I go to draw my cards, and as I'm lifting up my first card, he plays the flash guy that if your opponent would draw a card, you draw one instead. Notion Thief. And then proceeds to essentially, basically, like, call the judge and be like, well, he played this spell, and then in response, I played Notion Thief, and then he proceeded to, like, draw a card. And that's totally not what happened. He said, okay.
Yeah, okay should be a word that should be fucking banned in Magic. It has no purpose.
And he waited until my hand was on my library and, like, literally picking the card up, and he slams Notion Thief.
No, yeah. He was saying, okay, you did that, so now I'm going to do
this. I think
this.
He was fishing for a win because it was a game three, and we did end up going to time. And
it's like there's no reason not to play it first. Like, if the judge rules that he doesn't get to respond to your rev, like he just loses out on the notion thief. So like,
I think the judge took his word on it, because the judge comes over and he explains his story first, and I'm sitting and I'm like, no, dude, not how it happened or whatever. And he's just like swearing that he never said okay. I was like, look, I put the fucking card in my graveyard. Like, it's
so wait, he lied to the judge. He was misrepresenting the game state because he said okay.
And I got a warning.
Game loss.
I got a warning for
it's
looking
such
at cards.
Huge blowout if the judge doesn't rule in his favor, that him doing that is crazy. Like, he has to be fishing for wins.
I thought it was bullshit, and the judge, from that match forward up until like round four when I dropped, every time I looked behind me standing there, like just watching me.
Look, man.
Really, really weird.
I've casted a lot of instants, and I'm going to tell you that okay does not mean that it resolves. This story is all too fucking common.
Can I tell you if somebody says
okay to you, you need to like look at them and be like, okay, what?
Can I clarify some too? When I play any instant or sorcery, I set the card on the table in front of me. I don't put it directly in the graveyard or anything like this. I put it in front of me. I look at my opponent.
You put on the stack.
If they
like,
don't say anything, I usually ask them, does this resolve?
That's what the stack is.
And then I move it to my graveyard. I put it down. Yeah. I said, I'm doing this for four or five, whatever it was. He says, okay. Then I pick the card up and put it in my graveyard. And then literally, I pick up the card. I'm picking up the card from the top of my deck. It slams down notions.
I've said okay before when all I meant was okay. Now I realize you're putting that on the stack and I have to think about it.
Yeah.
I mean, he had the notion thief in his hand and he had the mana to cast it. And he said, okay, I don't think that you should take that to mean as like he cheated, because bro, like you're always going to cast a notion thief in response to that Sphinx's Revelation.
Well, why not say before I'm picking up my card, wait, or hang on, no.
Oh,
no,
you
no.
want to be like, whoa.
I get what Ryan is saying, because like what I'm about to say is like, I know from playing against Kevin, you know, whatever, the once or twice we played against each other, he says like, sure. If something is going to resolve, like on my side, I do say okay.
Bully judge story. I got it's kind of fucked up.
Real quick,
my homeboy. What's up, dude?
What's up, Kev?
Just with the okay, sure thing. The first.
Yeah, bubble, don't do that. Like, people that do that, shut the fuck up. Don't say stuff like that, because it leads to fucked up shit like this.
It was Modern in Philly, and they said, like, they made an announcement before the tournament. They were like, just make sure, because you all don't speak the same language, just make sure that your spell resolves. Like, okay does not mean your spell resolves. They literally said that over, like, the loudspeaker. They were like, okay does not mean your spell resolves. But the funny thing is that in Japan, you know how in the United States, if we shake our head up and down, it's yes, and left to right, it's no?
Uh-huh.
In Japan, it's reverse. Or something like that. But
are you sure that's not some shit that Tomoharu Saito said to fucking fill you out, dude?
No, I'm pretty sure that's true.
I'm pretty sure in Japan, if you shake your head left to right, it means yes. If you shake your head up and down, it means no.
Bro, I've watched a lot of animes, and they be nodding their heads to say yes. I mean, I don't know if it's different for cartoon rules, but that doesn't seem right.
No, but you see, in the cartoon rules, they give you, like, vibration, like, drawing to show you things and shit.
That psychedelic iridescence, man.
Giant drop on the back of your head when you're stressed out, and I don't get
exactly.
that.
Exactly. There you go. They'll give you, like, big hammer to hit you on the head to show that they have a headache.
Play some magic. Anyway. Don't say a lot of words. Spend a lot of mana, and you'll win. Like
no, my
shit,
my
like,
new
okay,
my new thing like, my new thing that I've been doing is I just really started playing control. So now like I say, does it resolve? Or if someone is resolving something, I'm like, I'm trying to get into the practice of saying yeah, it resolves, instead of saying okay, yes, sure.
I don't even say that. I like when I play magic, I'll cast a card and then I'll just look at you.
wait for the reaction. Well, Sid, what was your judge story, man?
Oh yeah, this was some shit. Like at a PTQ, man, this lady and her husband showed up, and her husband ended up top eight in it. But you know, she was at the old losers table with us. She was playing my homeboy. You know, that's like he's a pretty good player, and he's all right. But this judge like came up and had started hassling them about slow playing. You know, my boy Teo, he's very deliberate, but he can make the decision. You know, in the time, but he always like hesitates on things just to like map it out. And then this other chick, I guess, like, maybe she was newer to the game, but she was taking, you know, long times on her turns. And so this judge, like, sits next to him, right? And he starts, like, clicking his pen on the table, like, doing a timer. And then, like, he'll get to, like, 30 or 40 clicks, and he'll be like, player, make an action. And, you know, my boy Peo, he knows what he's doing, so he makes action. He even said he went so far as, like, he would wait for him to get rid of all of his clicks. He's like, okay, you done with your clicks now? All right, I do this. And then, like, move on with the next thing. But when he was doing it to this girl, man, it was, like, really stressing her out, dude. Like, she was not, like, relaxed, having fun at all. And the fact is if you're, like, 3-3 in a PTQ, then you're probably just playing to have some fun, man. Like, there was no reason for this guy to be here, like, well, we gotta keep you to the rule of law and shit. Like, what does it matter if they, like, ID or something? The guy was completely unnecessary. So my buddy talked to the head judge after the match, and dude got dealt with. He's a douchebag, though.
There you go. Nice. Well, fuck, man. Shit, Kevin, you been up to anything else? I mean, aside from winning a IQ and rocking these opens, more or less.
Yeah, I got a real busy month. I was in Richmond for the Invitational at the end of March. It was the first tournament with Dragons Legal, and I played a Standard and Legacy half and half, and I got top 64, so I made some money and some points. I played Jeskai in Standard, went 7-1, and I played Bug Delver in Legacy, or Sultai Delver, haha, and went 3-4, and then intentionally drew the last round for money. So,
that was
pretty good in Standard, pretty bad in Legacy. Still not a, you know, not a failure, probably broke even
on
the weekend.
What was up with your deck choice, man? Why didn't you play, like, a Jeskai deck, since that's your shit? You could have played, like, Miracles or something. Why'd you pick Sultai Delver?
One of my friends...
Because that's not an easy deck to play.
No, it's not. One of my friends is, like, a Legacy Grand Prix champion, and I've known him for years, and we're pretty good friends, and he's one of the best Legacy players I know. One of the best Legacy players around. He's well known to be an extremely good Legacy player. He won Grand Prix Providence in 2011. And so, whenever he goes, like, he doesn't play a lot, but he'll usually go to the Invitationals and Legacy Opens and stuff around the areas, so... You know, he was preparing for the event, so, like, I was, like, working on our Standard deck, and he was working on the Legacy deck, and he was just like, Sultai Delver deck is the best deck, it's what we should play. And I'm like, alright, whatever, play it. I've played Shardless Bug before, so I'm not, like, totally unfamiliar with the cards, but playing Stifle is just, I don't ever want to play Stifle again, I'm not comfortable playing Stifle. Like, playing...
It's really good against Derevi Imperial Tactician.
Playing, like, a Delver deck that also has, like, Shaman and Tarmogoyf, they're like a Delver deck with like mid-range green creatures in it that like is really mana hungry and like needs to ponder into lands, but at the same time like needs to leave up lands for Stifle and Spell Pierce. It's just like a really schizophrenic strategy, and like if you're not super comfortable with that type of deck, like it's going to be really hard to figure out when you're supposed to tap out and when you're not. And that's,
well,
like,
even super comfortable with the format, man, you know, you might be playing like, against Esper Stoneblade and they drop Jit on you and you're like, what the fuck, I didn't expect Jit, we're supposed to get Batterskull, you know, and like you need to play something like
you
that
know,
doesn't
like,
require so much knowledge.
The really good Legacy players like have the really like average players will have turn 2 Stoneforge Mystic in Legacy and be like, oh man, I got Stoneforge Mystic, and slam it down, and the next turn their Battlesoul gets Thought Seize and they just have like sick look on their face, like, what am I doing? But the real good players will like play it and then brainstorm it away when it gets Thought Seize and then like you know what I mean? And like save it and do all these things. Like, I play a lot of Legacy, but like, I don't know, should have played Shardless or I should have played
You should have played the one-player game, bro, at Ant or Epic Storm.
Or even Sneak and Show. There's a bunch of decks. Yeah. Like, I really just like playing with Gitaxi and Probe when I play Legacy because it makes everything so much easier. Like the
That card's so awesome.
It is so awesome. But yeah, regardless, that was that tournament. Wasn't too bad. Next weekend was Syracuse, and I was pretty good on day one, 6-2-1. So I was into day two, and then the wheels fell off on day two real bad. I had some rough draws and made a few mistakes and ended up, like, losing, winning my first round, then, like, losing 3 or 4 in a row and then dropping, and that's
Sorry,
that.
Sorry, homie, you ain't gonna make those mistakes no more, you know? That cost you a little bit, but you're gonna get that paper, so.
Yeah, it happens. Don't sweat it. It's like, as long as I finish every, like, event having learned something or having understood something in a new way, like, I consider it a success in at least some...
I mean, you can't spend it on malt liquor down at the corner store, but there is some value to that knowledge if that's your job, you know?
Man, that might get you to the liquor store a little bit easier.
Oh, my God.
Before it closes on Sunday, right?
Exactly. Yep.
Be like, don't tap out for Stoneforge. Will that pay for this 40? They're like, fuck no, get out of here.
No, but it'll get you to the store before 6.
It'll get you a life-linking 4-4.
So what was Syracuse? That wasn't the Open, is it?
It wasn't Open.
It was another invitational. I thought, okay.
The invitational was Richmond.
Yeah.
And then the next weekend was Syracuse. And then this past weekend was States, which I top aided Standard States and I scrubbed out a Modern States. But this weekend is an Open in Providence, Rhode Island. So I'm looking forward to that.
Not too far from y'all.
Right in our backyard.
Nope. He's always on that paper chase, man.
Yeah, grinding it
That's
out.
That's awesome, though. You're living the dream, bro. The thing I do, you know, after work while I'm drinking to unwind, that's like your job, bro, and that's the shit. It's fresh.
I'm really, like, excited to start. I've been, you know, playing on a team, and so, like, some of my friends and the guy at the local store is, like, sponsoring us, so, you know, he decks us out in shirts and stuff. And we get like checks or whatever if we do well. So that's
you get all the cards you need to.
Yeah, within reason. You know, I don't want to abuse it, but that type of thing is good too. So it helps with the costs and stuff. And I'm gonna be writing some articles for that store's website in the future, and hopefully maybe somewhere else too. So I'm excited to like start monetizing it and stuff like that too.
Okay, cool. Yeah, because he was on the page asking about if we knew about articles and shit. Yeah. But you got hooked up with that now, right?
Yeah, that store just got it's Kerwin's in Catskill, New York, and he just got his website up, so they're starting to have some content up there. There's some guys writing for free or for store credit or whatever, and I'm gonna start.
Now keep on that. That'll be like a second job for you, man. When we were talking to Craig, you know, Craig's out there in the tournament scene, but you know, the other half of his job is the content he creates, man. That's like another
way
you can
play the game.
And he's
good at that too. You've had like the other grinders that you've had on besides me are like all fantastic writers. So I kind of feel like I'm alone on the island of people who don't write.
Some of them are fantastic podcasters too. We miss you, Mark.
Yeah, Mark is.
We do miss
Mark. Mark is a great writer, and Ari Lax and Todd Anderson. They're like Todd Anderson's one of my favorite writers.
Lowry's
a great writer.
Now, we've had some badass homies on here, but K-Fed, you're family, bro. I mean, those other guys, they're fresh, but, you know, around these parts, you might as well be one of the hosts, man.
What's, Kevin, I don't mean to pressure you. With Providence coming up, there's two people within 5 points of you. You got to be feeling good that it's so far away from Joe Lissette.
Yeah, I mean, anytime that I hear he's not going to make the trip, it just feels like a little bit less stressful. It's definitely like not a joke either. Like last season, like people weren't super, they didn't realize like how awesome the Players Championship was and how awesome the whole system was. Uh-huh. So like not a lot of people were grinding out like the IQ points and stuff, but like in the past like year, like 6 months-ish, like Logan and Steve Mann down in Florida have like a lot of IQs down there. They crush IQs. They grind the points out. Like all these guys are doing great. Like, I got Danny Jessup and Jim Davis from Long Island. They crush the IQs. They go to all the Opens. So, like, it's definitely not – you can't just put the effort in and, like, be locked anymore. Now, like, you actually have to perform. Like, everybody is, you know, week after week, winning, passing people, God knows what else. So, it's like –
yeah, you can't just really show up and run out the clock, man. It ain't like a job where you get paid by the hour. You got to be bringing some skills.
Yeah, it used to be like if I – and the Opens being 2 days is a big difference, too, because – like, it rewards a different kind of thing. Like, last year, I played a lot of bad decks in Opens, and there was, like, a stretch where I probably went and top 32'd, like, maybe 8 Star City Opens in a row. Like, 3 or 4 weekends in a row where I was, like, top 32, top 16, top 32, top 16, like nonstop, like, months on end. It's harder to do that now, because instead of going 7-2-1 or 6-2-1 or 7-2 or whatever, you have to go, like, 10-4 or whatever, 10-4-1 or 10-11-4 to top 16 now. So it's harder.
Well,
and like you can't,
you're gonna get there, dude, because you already, you know, definitely in the discussion. Like anytime we have a Star City guy on here, they do mention you, and you can only get better. I think you're gonna get worse at Magic, so you're gonna find a way eventually where this new format's gonna be getting you even more money probably than you was making in the one day open
I haven't
deal.
Had since the it's been about like 3 or 4 months since the new open started, you know, the new format.
and I haven't had a top 8 yet, so that's a little frustrating, but I know that, like, it'll come around. Like, the longer it's easier to get variants out, too, and I hate to be like, oh, variants. Yeah. But, like, it is a thing, so, like, sometimes, you know, I had a few bad draws in a row, like, a couple rounds in a row, and boom, I was dead in the tournament, like, nothing, you know?
Well, for those that, you know, want to follow you and check out, you know, what's going on tournament scene wise, how can they reach out to you? You got a Twitter or anything? How can the people contact you?
Yeah, so I have a Twitter. The at handle is all one word, all lowercase, KJ versus the highway.
Okay.
It's a lyric from a punk rock song. It's me versus the highway, and that's where I got the name from. It's from my favorite band. So
I think I follow you on Twitter, but I'll have to double check.
It's a cute little catchy handle, and I don't tweet a whole bunch. Facebook is great. People message me all the time about stuff like that on Facebook, and I always answer as many people as I can. So Facebook is like the best, but I do have a Twitter too, which I use occasionally.
Okay, nice. Ruben,
when's that article? When are you expecting to get that article series started?
At this point, I'm probably going to see how Providence goes and write about it, because don't have a ton of material from state. And my last good finish was a top 16 in GP Miami in March, and that was before Cons came out, or before Dragons came out. So it was a dead format, so I didn't write about it because the information really didn't matter too much. So hopefully we'll do well this weekend, and I'll write something about it. And if not, I'll write about losing and what I learned.
Yeah, so keep us posted, man. Always need stuff actually, to read while I'm taking a dump.
I have a question about the writing.
One last thing for you guys. I told you I wanted to tell a magic story.
Oh, yeah. What's up?
It's just kind of long. I'll try to be within like 3 or 4 minutes. But
yeah,
it's,
dude. Dude, whatever. We're like way over the mark right now. We're time constrained. Should matter. Be considered. This is a fucking hostage situation. And you know, I bet our diehard fans are still listening. This is good radio.
Yeah, I expected to be here for a while. So I got comfortable and I had a blast. As usual.
There you go.
But yeah, so this is the craziest thing that I've ever seen while attending a Magic tournament. You guys ready?
Okay.
I'm in Boston for a 5K tournament. It was two 5K tournaments on Saturday and Sunday. This was 2010. So it's, you know, like 4 or 5 years ago. Fall 2010. And it's October. It's a little chilly, but it's still nice enough out that people are walking around. And this is important to the context of the story. So,
okay.
It's Sunday night, and it's funny we mentioned Alex earlier, but I'm driving a friend back to New York City. I was living in Westchester, finishing up college at the time. And I'm driving a friend back to New York City and going back to my apartment in Westchester. I had class the next day, whatever. It's Sunday night. So we are sitting in front of the convention center in downtown, or right in the center of Boston. I tell this guy to do me a favor, run in and give this Jace the Mind Sculptor back to Alex for me that I borrowed from him. And while he's doing that, I decide to go across the street, grab a drink from the market, and I do that, and I come back, and I'm sitting in my car, having a smoke, you know, smoking a cigarette, idling in, like, the fire lane,
mm-hmm.
And there's just this guy, like, 20-something, younger guy, in a suit, like, a three-piece suit, like, shirt, tie, suit, nice tie, whatever, and his friend's also wearing a suit, similar age, younger guy, one of them has dark hair, and the friend has, like, red hair. And
these guys, dude, are they the Yakuza Japanese mafia?
No, these guys are white.
It sounds like Ryan and his friend.
They're both white and really, really drunk.
Did they have Argyle socks on?
Or on, no Argyle socks, but they're on some sort of substance. And they're standing in like this alcove next to the convention center. And they are across the street from a bar that I had noticed them at previously. Like, we were out smoking in between rounds, and I'd see these guys out, like, in front of the bar, whatever. So now they're in this alcove, and this stuff is all important. And they're really drunk, and the darker-haired dude is losing it. Like, he's, like, spitting and frothing at the mouth and, like, yelling at his friend and, like, raging around and screaming, right? So his friend is trying to calm him down, and it's at this point where his friend is trying to physically restrain him and is like bear hugging him up against the wall, like, don't do it, man, calm down, it's okay, like just yelling at him, like trying to get him out of it. And like I said, it was nice enough that there's people walking around, and we're in, you know, right in the middle of Boston, so there's people walking back and forth, like up and down the street, couples and even some families and stuff, because it's only like 8:30, 9 o'clock at night, and there's a bunch of people around. And this guy, his friend is unable to contain him anymore, and he just, like, it was like something out of a movie. He just goes, aah! And, like, makes, like, a primal yell and breaks free of his friend and takes off running down the sidewalk in front of the convention center. And there's a guy and his girlfriend walking, you know, like, regular 20-something couple in hoodies holding hands, walking down the street in Boston. and he just makes a beeline, zeroes in on the girl in the couple, and takes like a leaping crow hop and just clotheslines her to the ground.
Shit!
And he climbs on top of this woman. Presumably he doesn't know, because it would be weird if he did. It was a random person on the street in Boston. Presumably doesn't know this person. Is straddling her. He's like banging her on the, like shaking her onto the ground and screaming and foaming at the mouth and just freaking out.
God, that's inhuman!
And the friend is like, oh my God, what are you doing? What are you doing? He's like losing it. And they're both in suits. And the boyfriend is just like smacking at the guy's shoulder, like, let her go, let her go. It was totally insane. And like, I'm sitting in my car like, oh my God, am I supposed to do something? Oh my God, oh my God, oh my God. And like the dudes from the bar are like all these huge, like local Boston dudes. Like they got like tribal tattoos and like biker boots and huge biceps, fitteds and God knows what else. And they like come running across the street from the bar over to the sidewalk in front of the convention center. And they just all start putting the boots to the guy. They like roll him off the road, kicking him in the ribcage and stomping him out. He's just screaming and rolling around. Then the dude came back and like the guy who I was driving to the city was like a really, really like nondescript like Chinese guy, and Peter is his name, and Peter's like he's got his rolling suitcase, and he like, you know, kind of walks out of the convention center and he sees like this nonsense going on the sidewalk and just like shrugs and gets in my car and we just drive back to New York and that's that.
But as if nothing ever happened.
So you said at the beginning of this that this was a magic story, but that's only because there was the Jace the Mind Sculptor.
This is true.
It was only because it happened at a magic tournament. It was the most insane thing I've ever seen. I was like,
but none of these people were like, were they magic players? Were these like you knew?
Just me and Peter were magic players. Like that was it.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I was like, Jace the Mind Sculptor, Alex Bertuccini, what's gonna happen? And like, I did not expect it to fucking go there.
The guy in a three-piece suit gets stomped out by a biker.
Yeah, I'd seen the guy like earlier in the night when we went to put our stuff in the car, and earlier in the night the guy was like, he was yelling at like a homeless guy. He was in his face, like with his hands.
Oh, that must have been my cousin.
Like screaming at him, being like, I'm trying to tell you, man, I'm trying to tell you. And the dude is just like, you need to get out of my face or I'm going to knock you out. You need to get out of my face, dude. Like,
and to think this all started round one when he mulled to five and got thought seized. And he just fucking lost his mind after that.
He just went home, got his best suit, got shit hammered, and some nonsense.
He did, bro. He got shit hammered and then went to the bar and just drank a bunch of water and acted really obnoxious. He was able to work up the courage to clothesline somebody's girlfriend.
His friend was the best because his friend was just like, the look on his friend's face when it happened was like, oh my God, we went from like our boy's wedding or our bachelor party or whatever to we're going to jail and we're never getting out. Like his face was just like pure like a horror, like what the hell is happening right now? It was pretty...
The thing that vexes me about this story is like the chick's boyfriend is like slapping at her shoulder.
Yeah, like stop it.
Bro, if that was my woman, I'd be like sabooing a motherfucker on the sidewalk or some shit, dude.
I expected the dude to just start like punching him or kicking him, but he was like crying. He's like, oh, get off her. It was really unusual.
Dude, I put that motherfucker in the camel clutch until his like spine snapped, man. You don't be fucking with people's girlfriends, man. That was like some dumb shit.
Yeah, it was really crazy. But yeah, that's
really
that's
uncalled for. That is nuts. Fucking A. I don't even know what to make of that. That's just the shit you see in Boston, I guess. But
Boston.
Dude, I mean, that's a motherfucking story. I ain't never seen no shit like that. I done seen some crazy shit.
Yeah, me neither.
I done seen a bunch of people in like wife beaters and cutoff jeans clothesline some chick's girlfriend, but a three-piece suit, that's fucking bizarre.
Pretty out there. Fucking A. If you got a fucked up story you want us to share on the air, anything like that, we do have a special email here that Sid could tell you about if you wanted to get a hold of us.
castfromexile@gmail.com. Or if you want to be a badass homie like KFed, you go over to the Facebook page, you say, hey dudes, I'm coming on the show, I'm gonna tell this badass story, and you're just gonna be on here because this is Cast from Exile, man. Everybody can be on here. We had, was it Miles of Vertical Smiles on here a couple weeks ago, man. Don't nobody know him. Just because don't nobody know you don't mean we ain't got no love for you.
We show got love, we show got love, love back. For all. We got love for all. So that's what's up. So yeah, you can get a hold of us. Of course, the Facebook page, Cast from Exile on Facebook. RU_Unleashed on Twitter. If you want to get at Ruben, we need to get his numbers up. So Ruben, you got an Instagram now too, right?
Yeah, it's the same shit. RU_Unleashed. I've been giving out the wrong info for what, like 4 months now?
Trying to avoid
yeah. on that thing.
But
so I mean, good, now man. That you guys have the actual Instagram, it's time to tell you that the Instagram contest was over. I mean, it was a place set of Ugans on the line, and that's like mad value.
But you had to first of all find the right Instagram account.
See, we kind of trolled you on that part. That was like the hidden challenge. Like you didn't even get to the thirst yeah, trapping part because you was me. Thirst trapping the wrong fool. And so if you went and met up with that dude, we're sorry, but you know you should have been better at the game. Maybe next time.
Next time, if you want to.
Plus,
get a hold
I need
of me,
my Ugin for my spread deck, anyways. Can't my Ugin.
If you want to get a hold of me at bro the brother Ryan on Twitter, bro the Yan, whatever, get at me, hit me up, be up. And until next week, fuck man, cards tab.
Hold on, man. I have a final thought.
Yeah,
this is true.
Do not ever scratch your sack with a cheese grater because you have no idea where that cheese grater's been.
Okay, that is some real sage advice. I didn't think you could top the advice you gave us the other week. But
oh, also, works. If I said anything that pissed you off, or if anybody said anything that pissed you off, quit being a pussy, send me some hate at sidshatemail@gmail.com.
There you go. Hit us up. Get in touch. Yeah, until next
week.
Oh,
yeah, and listen to Soulbond someday when it comes out.
Yeah, thank you, guys.
Every time Ryan tries to end the show.
Oh, yeah, cars and tap and ass to slap. Peace.
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 I'm full of kush. I'm stupid high. Stupid high. I popped a roll. I'm stupid high. Stupid high. Full up a trunk. Full up a trunk. I'm stupid drunk. Stupid drunk. I sip that purpose. I'm stupid slow, stupid slow. I'm full of kush, full of kush. I'm stupid high, stupid high. I pop the roll, I pop the roll. I'm stupid high, stupid high. Full up a trunk, full up a trunk. I'm stupid drunk, stupid drunk. I sip that purpose, sip that purpose. I'm stupid slow.
Southern smoke.
I'm hanging out with Lil White, so you know it's a party night. Dragging that fucker and popping rolls. Hope this nigga don't start a fight. Bring them white girls over to me. Two twin girls, it's plain to see that they smoke that purple kush and they sip that purple tea. Eyes real tight like Jackie Chan. Styrofoam cup tight in my hand. Just cause we from Tennessee, we get drunk off Jackie Dan. Hot in the club, might need a fan. Pass me some of that Jaeger, man. I'm tryna get so fucking high, I might leave in an ambulance. Keep on going, keep rolling. Blood in my mouth, I'm smoking. Girls taking off their clothes and silicone titties are showing. Dancing on the pole, I wanna stick my pole in. Way they twerk that ass, man. My big dick be frozen. I'm full of kush. I'm stupid high. Stupid high. I pop the roll. I'm stupid high, stupid high. Full up a trunk, full up a trunk. I'm stupid drunk, stupid drunk. I sip that purpose, sip that purpose. I'm stupid slow, stupid slow. I'm full of kush, full of kush. I'm stupid high, stupid high. I pop the roll, I pop the roll. I'm stupid high, stupid high. Full up a trunk, full up a trunk. I'm stupid drunk, stupid drunk. I sip that purpose, sip that purpose. I'm stupid slow.
Southern smoke.
Motherfucker, give me a couple of rolls and a couple of that purple stuff. I mix it up with a little bit of yellow and call that shit some dirt. The herb I puff, heavily on the daily. I should get a sponsorship, someone pay me. Twist the sweet, you have any idea how much money you made just since I've been blazing? Not to mention round and patrol. Don't tell her how much of my money they own. I do it all over again, just the same. Do it hot all day without changing a thing. My bad, I just woke my ass up from a nap. Mixed swag, I got me stupid high. I forgot that I was in the middle of writing a rap. No bullshit, gotta get back to the beat. Lay it down for J Sweet, get it to the
guys, I'm falling asleep in my chair here. I can't do this.